Armageddon. So hello again and welcome to the Mana Pool. This is episode 334 of the Mana Pool, and we're not going to talk about talk about three threes for four because I don't actually know how much Trevor costs. Something tells me it's more than four, though.
There are there's so many hill giants.
Well, that is hill giant.
Yes.
That's what a hill giant is.
Yeah. I couldn't remember the whatever. So, yes, we're brought to you, as always, by CardShark.com, a better way to buy and sell the magical cards. You should totally go there and buy some cards. Hey, you know, if I start with this, the casual deck building stream thing, you know, as long as I don't use any copyrighted music, I'll have to start actually, like, buying cards, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll buy them from CardShark.com. Excuse me. So, I'm Chewy. I'm not going to put any copyrighted music in my stream. If I do, I won't save the videos. And with me, as always, are some dorks. Dorks, who are you people again?
I'm Brian. I'm the lead rambler. And today I have suspend. I just wanted to see what would happen if I actually left the gap there.
The noise removal is going to take it out.
Silence truncation. It's going to ruin the whole thing.
That really does. The silence truncation really does affect the comedic timing of some of the weird stuff that happens. I've noticed that.
True. Yeah. But it also knocks off anywhere between like 6 and 14 minutes, depending on how long the episode is. So yes. It's worth the loss of some timing.
So the listeners don't have to hear us going, well, I would do it, but... So, I'm here to talk. There are no previews, which is good, because I'll talk slightly less. Except we've got something special this time that we haven't done in a long time, so I'm going to talk more. So it all evens out the same.
Well, balls.
How'd that happen?
I'm Mike, I'm the rules guy, and the game guy. What the heck?
Oh no!
What's in the box?
Okay, better. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I kind of threw myself off my game there.
Well, as the song goes, you had a little help from your friends.
Right. So.
And I'm Dirk, the self-proclaimed greenest man alive and moral compass of the group. And if you hear any sort of, it's definitely the boys.
So is that... Dirk, did you introduce yourself?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
he's
good.
The greenest man alive.
Yeah, and he is.
Moral compass and a moral compass.
Okay. Yeah, well, I just got done... sorting the Dirk cards, then.
The green rares?
Real quick, for the listeners, in case you don't pay any attention to Twitter. I'm resorting all of my rares because they were everywhere. Like, I had just colors together in a binder, but it didn't make any sense. And then I just found cards. When I was cleaning up the living room for the purposes of the live stream, I just found cards just everywhere. Like, oh, look, here's an entire stack of cards.
That happens.
So I emptied out all of my rare binders. And I'm going to have one binder that's just, well, I do have, actually, I did this first, one binder that's just old stuff that's pre-modern. Then I have standard stuff that's going to be in its own thing. And then everything that is between standard legal and still legal for modern, you know, so the modern legal stuff is all separate. And those are separated by colors. And then I have another binder here where I'm throwing everything where an individual card is worth more than $5. So this is my high dollar binder. And some of this stuff just floors me. EDH has done a lot to warp the format.
Warp the market.
That's what I mean. Yeah. The market format.
EDH like, has warped itself.
Like Azusa is $25 card. Like, really?
Of money?
I'm using mtgstocks.com, which draws values real time from TCG Player. So, okay. 20 to 25.
If you excuse me, I have to go make a deposit. Because I've got like 8 of those things lying around.
Right? I've got a crappy, stupid deck that's got like 3 of them. I'm like, I'm going to take that deck apart. But anyway, that has been between that and the intermittent part-time job being less intermittent than usual. I did have to do a quick, it's like an hour and a half drive today, but luckily I have a 3-hour minimum, so.
That's good.
And that was it. He was like, well, maybe we'll have something for you tomorrow. I was like, or maybe not. And I walked away. So as of the time of this recording, speaking of tomorrow, so if anyone's wondering what's going on with the Kickstarter, nothing. And it's a problem. It's not a problem, really, now that I know. I checked my Amazon payments account, and it showed a massive balance. And I went, yeah. And then I went to withdraw to bank account, and it said,
your withdrawal amount must be less than your disbursable balance of minus $758.90.
I'm like, whoa. I have to withdraw less than negative $758.90. And, yeah, see? Math is hard, but it ain't that hard.
Well, did you type in minus 800 and see what happened?
No, because I was afraid it would withdraw minus 800 and I would lose all the money that was in my bank account.
Yeah, you okay, thanks. Thank you for your payment.
So I poked around the Amazon Payments website. Now remember, Amazon Payments is the reason that the Kickstarter was delayed for almost a week. Like, it was delayed for, I think, 4 or 5 days because of Amazon Payments having to verify my account and all those hoops you have to jump through. So I poked around their website and the help and what is dispersible balance. And it says, well, your available balance is this. And I didn't have an available balance listed. And I started to twitch. So after 10 minutes of searching around their website, and I don't mean to brag, but if I can't find it in 10 minutes on a website, it's not there, or it's the new Wizards website. So, see what I did there? So I said, I don't know. Damn it. And I finally gave up and called customer service. And this very nice lady answered, and she told me that there's a 15-day reserve, meaning that once the money goes into the account, they hold it for 15 days, which, one, I don't understand that, but I'm sure there's reasons and whatever. But the thing that bothered me was not that they were holding it. It's that they were holding it and never told me. I had no idea why all this money said it was there and I couldn't have it. And I'd go to Kickstarter, and next to everybody's name, it said collected, 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 collected. And I'm like, okay, I got the... So, yeah, that's what it is. So, tomorrow evening, as of the time of this recording, I should be able to have access to everything that went through on the 8th, which means I can, you know, pay rent. Or, no, I paid rent. I can pay the bills for the month and start making orders for stuff. I sort of hit a wall on the backer surveys, and then I had a very full end of last week and beginning of this week, and I sort of... To be perfectly honest, I sort of forgot to go back to the backer surveys when I got free time. Yeah, I thought about that earlier today, and I went, oh, son of a...
Well, do you think tomorrow you'll be able to put an update to the Kickstarter page? Not necessarily a video, but just something?
Yeah, that is something...
Because you probably should, if all this stuff is going on.
That is something that I also meant to do today, so... And then I got caught up sorting green hairs. My bad. But... It's a large mess in my living room, man.
It's going to get even worse when those sleeves show up in a few months.
I can't. No, I'm going to have a place for those. But
okay.
I have to clean all this crap out first. So when I came home last night from where the hell was I last night? Okay, that's bad. But when I came home last night, Scott and his girlfriend had moved all of the magic cards off of the table over onto a TV tray over there so they could eat. And I was like, were the magic cards in your way? He's like... And Jacqueline goes, no, he didn't want us to, like, spill a drink all over all your stuff. And I was like, thank you. And he goes, she is kind of clumsy, you know. And she turned and gave him a look, and it was hilarious, and I really wish you guys could have seen it. But anyway.
I have seen this look. I don't need to see it to know it.
So then, Brian, I hear you have a thing for us.
I do. Returned from the darkness of yesteryears, from the ancient days of the people that did things in the dark, we have the Mad Lib, which may actually be a patented name. So we have another Manipool word game puzzle thing where you give me the names of magic cards and I fill in the blanks and I read it and it sounds... hilarious, and sometimes I can't keep myself from laughing, and it sounds incredibly juvenile.
Call it a magic lib?
A magic lib. Yep. I guess that's okay.
Is that okay?
Magic lib. Can we use magic? I don't know. Now sure, that you're actually making magic money off of this, all this stuff gets complicated. Hey, look, it's a word thing. Now, when I wrote this, I just wrote it because it looked cool, but there's actually a lot of blanks here. So let's get started, and if you take too long, I'm going to get mad. All right, give me a zone to play.
I could not hear that. I'm sorry.
Over dark. Give me a zone.
Mike's turn?
You know, I was about to say upkeep. I don't know what's going on with me.
Oh, God. We're all dumb.
Somebody want to actually
command,
give me a zone.
Command zone.
All right. An incarnation creature.
Filth.
Sorry.
Give me the name of an expansion.
Merida.
Give me an aura.
The Brute.
What?
The Brute.
You picked, like, the worst one ever.
The Brute?
Yep.
The T-H-E?
That is what it is called.
Yeah, and the art is a big dude on it that looks like a brute, and it's an aura.
That's an aura? Okay, yes. We need to keep going, but I want to see this later. That's weird. Okay, The Brute. Give me an instant.
I was to say, like, the hammer, but...
Yeah, I don't think there's one of those.
Wait, is... No, the hammer's a sorcery, isn't it?
Yes.
False.
Well, we got like 30 of these. Dismiss. You guys are doing great. All right, dismiss. Give me a plane.
Chandelar.
Of course.
Because they've been doing a lot with that lately.
Yeah, I think they like being able to use it as a generic fantasy setting. Now
it's kind of like replace Dominaria as like the go-to. Give me a sorcery.
The hammer. The Hammer of Bogarden. Yeah, that's the Hammer of Bogarden.
I love how you guys give me long names on purpose.
It's just what I thought of.
I know, I'm just giving you flack. Give me a land.
Flack. Wake up, you two.
The Grotto.
Grotto? Unholy Grotto?
There you go.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for Dirk to jump in at any point. That's
well, I'm like... As he's going through, I'm like, I can't think of anything.
I appreciate the fact that Dirk does not just have the random card generator going.
No, Gatherer doesn't have that option, the new Gatherer.
Yeah, it does. So you have to be on the simple rather than advanced and scroll down to the bottom.
I do.
So it's just a pain.
Give me an artifact.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, why did we tell him? Why?
Because sometimes what he finds is hilarious.
Racolite.
Ooh, what?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Racolite. Racalite.
Racolite? It's like Rakdos, but light.
It's the diet caffeine-free of Raka.
Yep. Okay. Racolite. Give me another artifact.
Aladdin's ring.
Dirk.
Oh, excuse me.
Do you have random...
No, I don't. That was one that, for whatever reason, popped into my head at some point. Was like, oh yeah, that should go in there at some point.
Okay. Give me a guild.
Rakdos.
Give me a green instant.
Naturalize.
That's a good one.
Give me a white sorcery.
Wrath of God.
Give me a land.
Scalding Tarn.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Give me a step or phase of the turn.
I already said that.
Exile.
I'm just going to move to my exile step.
Combat.
I heard upkeep first.
Okay.
There's going to be another one in a minute. Give me a creature type.
Tree folk.
Give me a blue instant.
Blue doesn't have instants.
Vapor snag.
Give me a sorcery.
Is pulverize a sorcery or an instant?
Dirk, you've got Gatherer open.
I do. Which one is it?
Pulverize.
Pulverize. Sorcery.
Okay.
Give me a creature.
Crypt Cobra.
That's got not quite poison.
Give me an equipment.
Umezawa's Jite.
How's that spelled?
It's well, not.
You start with an Uma.
Give me a white enchantment.
Gifts of Granite.
All right, then. It's
gifts?
Singular, though.
No, it's okay. Gifts of Granite.
Yeah.
Thank you. Give me a legendary creature.
Let's see. Let's go with Nilium, God of the Hunt.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm like, I've got that screen open.
Spoilers.
I'm just impressed you didn't go to the go-to. All right, give me a step or phase of the turn.
Exile.
I am going to turn this car around.
Combat.
Combat, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one we were waiting for.
All right, give me an aura.
Man, I don't know. Ooh, Splinter Twin.
Yeah.
The Brute.
Give me a creature.
Kargon Dragon Lord. Remember that guy?
Is he the one that was, that like, if he had six lands...
No, he's the
That's the
up.
Dragon Master Outcast. Kargon Dragon Lord was a level up guy who was riding a level. Dragon.
Yeah, he was actually featured in a Mark Rosewater article not too long ago where talked about how the art looks great, but the art looks like a dragon, not a guy. So give me an artifact.
Defense grid. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just thinking about the next game I want to play. What was the question?
Give me an artifact. So defense grid. Give me an enchantment.
Presence of the master.
All right, Einstein. Give me an instant or a sorcery. You choose.
Memory lapse.
Not shred memory, because that pisses people off.
Sorcery.
Time warp. That was all for you, Brian.
Thank you. Give me a creature.
Lord of Atlantis.
Give me a planeswalker.
Jace. Baby Jace. Jace Beleren.
Give me a black aura.
Torture.
Oh, yes.
Give me a land.
Strip mine.
And finally, give me an instant or sorcery.
Silhouette.
I'm not even going to try and write that correctly.
I can never spell it right on the screen.
Okay, let's see if I can make it through this. I haven't done this in a long time. The name of this is The Final Frontier. Have you ever gazed up at the command zone in filth? Did the Mirrodin of it fill you with a sense of the brute?
Yes, again.
Did you ever dismiss of traveling into the highest reaches of Chandelar? You may have heard that the government recently hammered of Bogardin to funding for all outer unholy grotto exploration programs, but worry not. Where one Rackalite closes, a new Aladdin's Ring opens. We here at Rakdos Industries are naturalized to announce the opening of our new privately funded and Wrath of Godded program right here in Scalding Tarn. Coming next upkeep, even you, the private tree folk, will have the vapor snag. We'll have the vapor snag. I don't know. We'll have the vapor snag to pulverize the stars. Our state-of-the-art facility was built right here by local crypt cobras and comes equipped with the latest Umazawa's jetés. All patrons will undergo gift of graniting by our head instructor, Nylia, God of the Hunt. At the end of 3 combat steps, you'll be Splinter Twin to go. You and our volunteer Kargan Dragon Lords will board our completely safe defense grid for your Presence of the Master journey. You can even choose the length of your trip simply by memory lapsing how much you will pay.
Sounds like something Mike would do.
So come, time warp the heavens. Encounter new Lords of Atlantis. Walk in the footsteps of legends like Jace Beleren. So leave your tortured life. Leave your tortured life behind on the strip mine and come silhouette with us. Pulverize the stars. Pulverize the really? Stars.
I was just thinking that.
Really?
Yeah.
I couldn't. Congratulations. You once again took what I thought was fairly straightforward and made it really weird. Which are the best kinds?
I do like to leave your tortured life, though.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I don't know if I want to be gift of graniting, receive gift of graniting by Nylia, though. That seems really painful.
Now that you're done, you need to look up the brute and see how bad it is.
Yes. Is it bad? Like, is it a bad card?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's bad. It's just bad.
It's bad. It's bad.
Oh, it's bad.
Okay. You can keep going. But that was hilarious, and if you liked it, let us know in the forums and the comments and everywhere, and hopefully we'll do more in the future. I know that makes it sound like it's a new format. It's not, but it's one we haven't done in a while, partially because I haven't had time to make them. So...
And who knows? There might be new listeners who haven't been around long enough to hear the last one.
Yeah, if this is the first one you've heard, we've been doing this for a while, just kind of sporadically. Oh my god, that's terrible.
Found the brute.
But it turns into like a, who is it, Chandler?
Air on the Relentless.
It turns it into an Air on the Relentless.
But the brute came first, weirdly enough.
So Aaron is what, like just a guy that's wearing the brute?
Yeah.
That's hot.
I don't think I want to wear a brute.
What is, okay, so tell the listeners what the brute does.
For one in a red, it's an aura, enchantment aura, enchant creature. Enchant creature gets +1/+0, and pay 3 red, regenerate enchanted creature. It's not
wow, that's
good.
Way.
I mean, you know, for that much these days, you know, for one in a red, you have, what, like +3/+0 and can't be blocked and stuff and stuff. It's got a community rating of 1.5 stars.
Yeah.
I think, let's see, if you go to the Legends version, I think that I actually used that quote for my senior quote for the yearbook.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. What's the Legends version, Brian?
Union may be strength, but it is where blind brute strength is mere blind brute strength unless wisely directed.
Is that attributed to anybody, or did they write that?
Samuel Butler.
Oh, okay. So that sounds way too intelligent to be just flavor text.
Yeah.
At least in the fourth edition, he's wearing a loincloth. There's no evidence of a loincloth in the later editions.
Whoa. Damn it, now I've got to look. You mentioned missing loincloths, and I'm all over that.
Hell yeah. Throw someone in the fire.
Okay, here
Thank we go. You, Mike, for opening my eyes to...
Oh, it got new art later. Oh, I didn't know there was in 5th edition. I just know the 4th edition and Legends version. Well, how about that? Everyone go look that up. It's awful.
Yeah. 5th edition got a lot of new art. The problem is that there was 100,000 cards in 5th edition, so... I mean, I know, Chewy, you've mentioned before that you've never seen something before when we bring up the 5th edition version of something.
Yeah, 5th edition was right around the time that I was getting out of the game the first time.
It was the single largest set, period.
And it was huge, and anything I wanted from it, I probably got in 4th. So, so yeah. Okay, hang on, I have to move the table.
5th edition was so completely overloaded. I think, was it over 500 cards?
Give me one second.
Dirk is on the case.
449 cards.
Ah, okay, it was over 400 cards.
It's over 400?
Yeah.
Dang it, man.
Yeah, that was too much.
So, we do have a little bit of news to jump into before we get to what we're going to waste the majority of our time doing. First up, the new Hall of Fame class was announced.
Oh, cool.
So if none of these guys, you know, do anything to get some DQ'd from something, damn it, Saito, then they'll be inducted into the Hall of Fame at Worlds?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So the new class is Makihito Mihara, who was the highest vote getter. Paul Rietzel.
Yay.
Who is, well, according to this, he's one of the patron saints of aggro. Mm-hmm. And Guillaume Wafotapa, who is one of the patron saints of control.
So control, yeah. We've got aggro, we've got control. So they're placating both sides, I guess.
So yeah, there you go.
Guillaume is like control personified.
He really is. And back before all of the controversy and all that, I loved to watch him play. Because, I mean, I didn't love to watch him play. I loved to read about him playing. Because watching him play was actually kind of boring. But
that's
what
how you
he
knew
did.
He was good. Yeah.
What he did was awesome. He was one of the guys behind the what's that search for an instant or spell with flashback? Mystic something. Mystical teachings?
Mystical teachings, yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the mystical teachings control decks guy back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
What was that, Time Spiral? Yeah. Before this show. So,
a year. Yeah.
So anyway, back when I listened to Rich Hagen's Grand Prix and Pro Tour podcasts, I would always love it when Wafotapa was one of the guys in a match he was covering, because the way Rich Hagen did it, you didn't have to sit there and wait for him to make a play. Not that he was slow playing, it's just he's a consummate professional.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Does not leave anything to chance.
So anyway, that's
I think that's... I think that's why a lot of the professionals, they have a reputation as being control players, or people think of control players control decks as being the more professional decks. And that's because a lot of control decks do their very, very best to eliminate any variance whatsoever. So, anyway.
It's true.
You heard it here first.
Well, probably not. But
probably not.
So that was that. I'm rating the Monday Night Magic show notes. So this is just something I've noticed. Usually during the time when we're recording and immediately afterwards and even sometimes the next day, Monday Night Magic, mm-hmm. I'll see people pop in and out of the show notes Google Doc that are not on the show. They're just popping in to like steal from our news to go do their own show.
So someone's spread the share link around a few too many times.
No, it's everyone basically who's ever been on the show. I've had to give them access to the show notes, and I don't go
take
it away. I just find it funny. I'm like, why did I see Marcel in the Monday Night Magic show? Oh, he's gone. Huh, that's weird. Then, oh, there's John Celso. What's he doing? Oh, he's gone.
That's how you know that you're talking about interesting stuff is when everybody else – you're basically the the Associated Press.
Oh, man. Anyway, so there's more news that Brian wanted to talk about briefly.
Well, I think it's relevant, but I promised you I wouldn't go over and over it. By now you've heard about it. By now you've probably read a lot about it, unless you haven't read a lot about it. But there's a lot out there to be read. Let's just put it that way. There's been a lot of, I think I read the phrase, digital ink spilled over this topic. They are changing the way that PTQs work for the first time in 08 ever. The system has pretty much always been, if you want to go to a pro tour, you either qualify through points like winning a GP or bribing wizards, or you could go to a pro tour qualifier.
Oh, no, they got rid of the bribing wizards thing 6 or 7 years ago.
Was that the 6th edition rules change? But you went to a pro tour qualifier, and you qualified for a pro tour. And, you know, they have the seasons where for any given pro tour, right now we're in for qualifiers for pro tour Cons of Tarkir, and the season is modern. So if you want to go to a pro tour qualifier, you're going to play modern. And now they're changing it so that you will go to a local preliminary pro tour qualifier, or PPTQ. I've also heard people call it a PTQQ, like a pro tour qualifier, but Wizards is using the preliminary language, so that's what I'm sticking with. And then the winner of each of those, and keep in mind there's supposed to be like a bunch, and we'll get to that in a sec, goes to a regional PTQ. And then from that, either the top four or the top eight players we'll go to the pro tour, and it sounds like the travel invites will be the same. So, you know, if you win or do very well at the regional one, then they'll cover your airfare, etc. The reason I said there's going to be a bunch is because any store that is qualified at some level that I don't understand can voluntarily do one PPTQ per season. So if Lucky's wants to do one for Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir, they already have, but if they were getting signed up, they could say, okay, we're going to do it. The other interesting thing about this that I think is significant is that the store owner or the person, the tournament organizer running the event can choose what the format will be. It's not bound to the season anymore. It can be standard. It can be modern. Or it can be limited, which means sealed and draft. Usually sealed for the Swiss and draft for top eight. And I find that extremely interesting because then if I feel like going to a standard one, or if I feel like going to another modern one, or especially if I feel like going to a sealed one, I can just go on and say, okay, what are the local stores? What are they running this season? And when are they doing it? And I'm going to be disappointed if it's all standard all the time, like the Pro Tours will be for the next year, which is a separate announcement.
So weird.
But I'm going to be disappointed if it's basically the same, but I'm looking forward to possibly playing in more sealed events because more sealed is good. So I'm not outraged by this. I am more just curious to see how it will go. I think anytime there's change, there's a potential for some really awesome stuff. And I'm sure this will not work out nearly as well for some people. But for me personally, like I said, I'm just waiting to see how it pans out. I don't go to PTQs a whole lot as it is. So it's hard for me to imagine going less, but there's a possibility that I could go more. So cool. Anybody else have any thoughts about this?
I mean, I think, go ahead.
I was just going to say the reason they're doing it is, to keep PTQ. So PTQs are getting upwards of 2-3, and it says here sometimes even 400 players for one event. And
yeah, in the big populous areas, it's getting out of control a little bit.
Yeah, which means that any one person's chance of winning a PTQ is just awful. And they don't want to discourage people from coming, so they want to adapt it to that.
Right.
So they, the only way they could figure out to do that was to add a step. And that's, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens, you know.
I don't know if we'll see.
I mean, now you have to take down two tournaments to get in instead of just the one, but eh.
But it's a pro tour, so that's fine.
Yeah. I'm also thinking, you know, well, it's supposed to be hard to get into it.
Exactly.
And, I don't know how much easier it'll be, if it'll be easier. There's been a lot of discussion about if it's easier or harder, but I can still see, I can still see some fairly competitive players just traveling to all the ones within their, like, say 100, I was going to say yards, that's not right, but within 100 miles of their home.
Oh, okay.
To go to all these. So I don't know that they will necessarily be less competitive. But again, for me, as someone that's never qualified for the Pro Tour, I'm more going for the experience. And yes, I'd love to have a chance to go, but, I'm just curious to see. So anyway, I just want to throw that out. What was Mike going to say? Or Chewy?
Oh, I guess the reason that they're letting the Stormers choose the formats for all of them is because they're standardizing formats for the Pro Tours themselves so that players can get varied experiences going to PTQs and everything and whatnot. And they're not, you know, if there's one season that's a format that a player just doesn't play or can't play, they're not just like, oh, well, damn it, you know, and can't really do anything.
Like right now, if you don't play Modern, you got to wait 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I understand why they would, like, for example, take Block Constructed out of the Pro Tour rotation, because, like, for most people, I mean, I'm sure not aware of any other events, but, like, the Pro Tour is the only event that actually gets run in that format, and it doesn't really inform people very much about what they're playing on a weekly basis.
Yeah, Block Constructed only mattered for the big tournament and any tournaments that fed into it, if there were any. And that was it. Like, no one cared otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And Modern is cool for people to watch for GPs and stuff, but it still has an accessibility problem. And Standard will always be the flagship format. And that's what Wizards will want to show off on the pro stage.
Yeah. Something that I pointed out on Monday Night Magic is that Legacy is always the same. Every once in a while, you know, something will shake it up, but it's very, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
Modern...
I mean, there's a ton of decks in Legacy, but still.
Oh, yeah, there's a gazillion. But the decks that are there are pretty much the same as they are now.
Right.
And, you know, sure, with every new set, there might be one, maybe two cards that are Legacy playable in some deck. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So the rate of change in Legacy, other than, like, some tweaking for metagaming and whatnot, is very low. Modern is... So let's call Legacy a straight line. Modern is like a moderate incline. Like, Modern changes, but not terribly much compared to Standard. Like, Standard, right. New sets come out, and it changes the entire format, and oh my god, check this out. And Pro Tours are set to happen right after a new format happens.
Yeah.
So a new set comes out, the entire format changes, the pros can show off their stuff, because Pro Tours are where you see the awesome new Standard tech.
Yeah.
Or, in the case of Ivan Flock's deck, the miserably boring new Standard tech.
I was amazed to see that deck in the top 8 list. I'm like, wow.
And he won with it.
The Pro Tour is both a thing for players to aspire to, which helps sell product, because you can have a great time sitting around with your friends, but there's also the aspect of, what if I ever got to the Pro Tour? And that makes you strive to do better, and to do better, sometimes you need to buy more product. But it's also a chance to kind of promote their own celebrities and say, hey, look, these are the big faces. And isn't it awesome that a player with zero pro tour points and at his first pro tour made it to the finals?
Yes,
of the pro tour. I had no disrespect whatsoever for the eventual winner, but man, I was like, wow, it would just be, I mean, it's a great accomplishment that the other player got as far as he did anyway. You just don't see that sort of thing anymore. At this point, the pros are so well known and their play is so consistent that you just don't see these breakout performances. And I feel this is very good for the health of the game, because now that literally says to every player, hey, that could be you. If you're good enough and if you're willing to commit to it, that could be you. Because sometimes I think you don't see that message as much, and it's more just, oh, look, it's the same five players.
And so, that was Jackson Cunningham was his name.
Right.
Yeah. And while we're announcing things, Jeremy Dazzani was the player of the year this year. Uh-huh. And I have had to say his name many, many, many times on Monday Night Magic, so...
You're getting better at it.
Thank you. But, I mean, because I've had to say his name so many times, that does not surprise me at all that he's player of the year. And then Jared Botcher is the rookie of the year. And I talked to him in Richmond, I think. He seems like a hell of a good guy. So yeah, nice, congrats to both of them.
Always nice to see good guys and girls do well.
I mean, he's rookie of the year, but he's so good that he worked his way up to platinum status in that period of time. So
exactly.
Platinum?
Yes.
Wow.
That's how much of an awesome rookie he is.
What I understand about the pro statuses, and which is admittedly fairly minimal, is platinum is not something you just... Players work for years to get that.
Yeah, it takes mucho points to get that.
Yeah,
it was 45 pro minimum, 45 points. Now it'll be 48 next year, but, you know, whatever. That's another change they made.
Yeah, but they're also changing some of the point payout structure and blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
There's also four pro tours every year now.
Yeah, another big announcement for those that are... And this is totally not for our audience, but while we're talking about all this stuff, you now get pro points from Grand Prix based on your record, not based on your standing. So at a 4,500-person event, Vegas, if you finished, you know, X and 1, you might still be out of the top 100. So they're paying out to compensate for larger events, which is the trend now. So
that, I mean, that's the basis behind pretty much all these changes.
Yeah.
Is,
yeah, oh, God, too many people.
Well, you think about Grand Prix Charlotte last year and how that broke records. And then you had Las Vegas, which broke records. And then we've had at least two more since then that have broken records. It's just... I think one writer put it well. He said Magic is becoming a victim of its own success. So, which is a good thing, but it doesn't mean that everything is all giggles and sunshine. You've got real issues with these things being so big. So anyway, I know that I appreciate you letting me bring that up. I just knew that's something that everybody knew about, and we maybe need to touch on a little bit, but we don't have to go over all of minutia.
I mean, our audience is not just people who sit around playing Commander and 60 card Durling at a kitchen table. Actual people listen to us every once in a while. Or actual people. Actual
ooh,
Magic players.
Wow.
Listen to us every once in a while.
Awesome. Ooh, another diss.
Oh, shut up.
Wow. You cannot take that out. You have to leave that in.
Oh, yeah, that's I don't take stuff out. Unless I swear. So, they also announced something else. The Grand Prix promo for next year is super sweet.
It is.
And this is from a guy who just filed away his Lotus Cobra and his Primeval Titan.
I am so impressed the last couple years. I used this in the Mad Lib, but I saw this and I was like, yes!
Yeah, so the GP promo for 2015 is...
They have a habit of doing GP promos that are banned in Commander.
Right?
Primeval Titan. Gristlebrand.
Yeah, check out this new art. Oh, man, I can't wait to throw this in my commander. Oh. I think just for us, I'm going to have to throw Gristlebrand in one of my decks, because I'm not going to do anything broken with it other than
play him,
draw 7 cards and punch you.
See, the problem is that once you draw 14 cards, because why wouldn't you draw 14 cards? Everyone's just going to be looking at you. And then you're going to be like, oh, I know.
Okay, maybe I'll just throw it in a 60-card deck then.
Yeah.
Oh, Oh, they also announced the Grand Prix schedule for next year, and there's like a gazillion of them. And I'm really hoping to go to some.
They're increasing it from, I think, 40-some to 52.
Something like that, yeah.
So I was so excited. I scrolled down the list. I was like, Charlotte, yes, finally. And it's modern.
Balls.
Duh.
You can bring it back, man. You can try again.
I know.
There's only one event.
I know. I don't hate modern. It's just not sealed. I'm like, So.
That's true. It is not sealed.
So yeah,
and there's one in Indianapolis where my family lives, my parents live, and it's standard. And I'm like, come on.
So in June of next year, June 13th and 14th, there will be Grand Prix Charlotte again. And if at least two of us aren't there, it's because either we're dead or someone very close to us is dead.
Probably. Like, I gripe about it a little bit, but I'll probably be there. I mean, it's Charlotte, so.
I'm pretty, well, even if you don't play in the main event, you gotta go.
Yeah.
Because it's a Grand Prix and it's right there. So for those that aren't aware, we're in North Carolina. Charlotte is maybe an hour and a half away, depending on traffic.
Depending on which part of the city you're going to.
Also that. And I know I'm planning on being there. It sounds like at least Brian is.
Probably.
Probably.
I mean, that's over a year. No, it's under a year, but it's a lot of almost a year. So
I know Clue said he wants to go. I know Jack Lacroix said he wants to go. Bill will probably go. Actually, we'll probably ride down with Bill like we did last time. So, so this is going to be awesome. So everybody come to Grand Prix Charlotte. If it's as big as last time, they will be prepared this time.
I will totally go and assume that I'm not going to make day two, and then I'll make day two and crash in Chewie's bed again.
Yes, and Carrie will hate you. Again?
She will say, why'd I let you do this again?
Sorry, Brian, you're too good to leave the house. Too good at magic.
Oh, that actually reminds me of something I was going to say about the preliminary Pro Tour qualifiers. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe that with the PTQs the way they are, if you happen to find a small one, it's too easy to just luck yourself into a Pro Tour invite. For God's sake, I top 8 at a PTQ once.
With a deck you shuffled up that day.
Yeah, with a deck I'd never played before. And sure, it was a good deck that fit my style, and that helped. But I mean, really?
The Kamikaze deck? Yeah, that was like Chewy with a side of Chewy.
Yeah, but really it's not, it shouldn't be that easy for me to just luck into a top 8. You know, if I had, some of the onlookers swear up and down I had the game won at one point, but I had myself coming out with him at one. But if I had managed to win
A lot of the people standing around telling you that were people I usually end up shaking my head at on other occasions.
Yeah. So had I won that match, it's entirely possible I could have had a Pro Tour invite, and how sick would that have been? So, I don't know. it should be harder than that. So having to take down two tournaments to get to a Pro Tour seems fine to me.
Yeah.
Granted, I'm not trying to go, so it doesn't piss me off.
Oh, and one last thing I just wanted to say. We hinted at it a little bit. The Pro Tours for the next year are going to all be standard and then draft as their formats. That is only set for the next year. It is not something that they are doing forever and ever. So
yeah, they're just talking about it for next year because they want to try it out and see what happens.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we mention that since we had said this is what they're doing. I didn't want people going, oh my God, this is terrible. I'm never watching again. I hate the Pro Tour.
Yeah, Pro Tour sucks. Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh, ooh, where's the chat? Where's the chat? Where's the chat? Here's the chat. This is for you guys. Listeners, there will be a link in the show notes that says, oh God, why? Just click on it.
That's good.
That's all you, this was in the Monday Night Magic show notes. And I was like, what in the hell could this possibly, So listeners, trust me on this. Find that in the show notes and click on it.
Don't, cause.
Yeah, do it. Do it, you wuss.
One more thing about the Pro Tour. It was, was good to see seven different decks in the top 8. You know, Owen and Huey were playing the same thing. There were two other pairs of decks that had the same colors and basic strategy, but their their content was pretty materially different from each other.
Oh, okay.
Now you look at the Star City Open that was that same weekend, and there were four
Mono Blue.
See, and that makes
top eight.
And knowing that made me wonder, actually, you know, is this indicative of some kind of, okay, there's this metagame for the best of the best, and then there's one for the rest of us. Like that, like how, what are we missing that makes that happen in the metagame for the rest of us? What have we done wrong to deserve this?
Ooh. One more thing about the Pro Tour. Something that we actually missed on, Monday Night Magic. If you look past the top eight, you will see John Finkel sitting there in the top 16 as he has to have passed Kai as the greatest Magic player ever because he just keeps doing well at big events.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And it's not like he's making the rounds. You know, if there's a Grand Prix nearby, he'll go. Otherwise, yeah. He's just, I'm going to go to a Pro Tour now. Just top 16, $5,000, whatever. Later, y'all. Damn it, Johnny Magic.
He's just that good.
He is just that good. Buh. Okay, I think are we done with that now?
I think we're done with mm-hmm. that now.
One okay. more thing about the Pro Tour.
I don't think he's serious.
No, I'm not.
Dang it, man.
That's why I said it in that voice.
Oh, that voice, though. All right, hang on. I'm assembling all the links for these so that we don't... GP schedule. So, yeah, everyone go to Charlotte. Seriously, not even playing. Oh, for God's sake, while we're on news, there's another thing. I have been asked to go to something called the Tilt Expo. Tilt Expo. So a couple years ago, we talked about the Escapist Expo in Durham.
Right.
And we went to the first Escapist Expo. I know me and Mike. Brian, were you there?
No.
Okay. So me and Mike and Bill, that was the third person.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the Escapist Expo and we played in the Magic Tournament. That's where me and Clues sat down to talk to Finkel and Bob and yep, do that epic Finkel and Bob interview. And Clues almost DQ'd you because of sleeves, right?
That's what he does.
It's true. So the Escapist is no longer the focus of the expo, but they're still sponsoring an expo and it's called Tilt Expo. And it's going to be in Durham, North Carolina, September 5th through the 7th. And they're going to do a big draft, Friday Night Magic. They're going to do a big M15 sealed tournament on Saturday. And they have asked me to come and be part of a podcasting panel.
Cool.
Which is awesome. And once I get more information about that, there are podcasters of other varieties who are going to have a presence at the expo. And I assume they will have a presence in this panel, too. I don't know. My contact has also mentioned something about possibly doing another panel just for Magic podcasting, but I don't know if that would really be worth it at a place like this. So, I don't know. But once I get more information, I will let everyone know, but I'm definitely going to be there and be part of a panel so you can come ask me dumb questions and all that and play Magic. And they're going to have Movie Bob is going to be there, and they're going to have lots of gaming, board gaming by Foam Brain, who did the gaming at the Escapist Expo. They're going to have a cosplay contest and Humans versus Zombies, where you run around and shoot each other with Nerf guns, and all kinds of stuff like that. It's going to be awesome. And as more information becomes available, then I'll let everyone know. They're going to do speed dating with Mating Habits of the Modern Geek, which just makes me happy beyond all reason. You don't even know. They're going to have a console gaming room, a board gaming room, I think a PC gaming room. There's going to be Magic in the grand ballroom. It's going to be a whole lot of gaming and a whole lot of nerdiness and a whole lot of cosplaying and a whole lot of shooting people with Nerf.
And when is this again?
September 5th through the 7th.
Okay. That's coming up fairly soon, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's awesome. Anyone that's nearby should totally go, and anyone that's not nearby should totally think about coming. Because, yeah, so on the guests page, there's Movie Bob, and then there's me. Bam! There's Rich Parada is an artist for DC. He's going to be there. The Fandames Initiative, I think that's how you pronounce that, who are a nonprofit organization that empowers women in the geek and nerd fandoms. They'll be there. Mating Habits of the Modern Geek, Advice on Love and Dating Within Your Own Species. They're a podcast and blog. They're the ones doing the speed dating. and then the humans versus zombies thing, and that's just what's on the site right now. It's tiltexpo.com. Link is in the show notes. So everyone go check that out. Like I said, I'll be there because I'm awesome like that and because they asked. Actually, one of the people, my contact is a friend of Bill's, and she asked him about podcasting, and he goes, "Hey, I know a guy." Because it turns out, I don't know if you know, but I'm kind of a big deal. anyway. Okay, then. So that's that. Now let's talk about something else. Oh, my gods. Was that bad?
Wow. And I have had some bad segues in the past, but
that's all I wanted is for someone to groan and someone to giggle. And I got both. Yes.
It didn't even register with me as a joke. I didn't know what was going on.
And that was the third. That was the stretch goal.
What is this? I don't even.
So as we were floundering for something to talk about, like we do most weeks, if there aren't previews, we're like, oh, God, what are we going to do? And lucky for us, Dirk was on the ball and was like, hey, why don't we X? I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then no one else responded, so that means that sounds great. Brian, if you responded, that means it didn't go through. And Mike, I know you didn't respond.
My email is bleh. But yeah, so Dirk, why don't you tell us what we're talking about?
So with the Theros block officially shown, and all the gods are made available and known and everything, the thought was that we'd go through each of the gods, sort of compare them, which ones are really good, which ones just kind of flounder, which ones are good for this setting, which ones are good for that setting. So it was just thought to just run down all the gods, not like with a lawnmower.
But, run them down. I see you over there. You get us from me.
Little known fact, Dirk is actually Kratos.
Is Brian going Caddyshack over there?
I think he was.
Holy crap.
A little bit, yeah. Sorry, I think it was running people over with a lawnmower and I go redneck. I don't know why.
I could go more obscure and go Caddyshack 2. Mrs. Astor House. But no one remembers that movie because it was terrible. Is it
Caddyshack 2?
See?
I've seen Caddyshack a million times. I don't think I've ever heard of a Caddyshack 2.
You don't.
Maybe there's a reason why.
Yeah. Anyway, keep going, Dirk. Sorry.
No. But it was just the thought to go through all of them and talk about them in their settings and kind of just give a thorough rundown of all of the gods that are in the Theros block.
Yeah, now that they've been around a while and we've all seen what they can and can't do. You know, it's not like during the previews where it was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. It's like, oh, this is going to suck. It's like, I have no idea. It's like, now we have some more information to go on.
Okay. How do you want to, start with the monocolored gods? And you said go through all of them, but, you know.
Yeah, we'll start with the monocolored and just work our way through the blocks.
Yeah, we'll do the monocolored and then the allied colors and then the enemy colors because that's how they were given to us.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, now, from a tournamenty fresh standpoint, all five of the monocolored gods have had some time in the sun.
Yeah, someone tried.
Yes.
Yeah, Heliod was really big for when he first appeared, and then he sort of fell out.
Yeah, that didn't last very long.
Thassa and Erebos are still just trucking along hard.
Yeah, Thassa probably right now probably is the god to beat, even though Erebos... Mono black is one of those things that if you're just not prepared for it, it just wins every time. But he's not necessarily the linchpin of that deck. Whereas Thassa in a mono blue deck is really something to be feared.
Yeah. And then Purphoros and Nylia have seen more than Heliod, but less than Erebos and Thassa.
Yeah, Nylia's been in ascendance lately, as far as the news that I've been reading.
Yeah, well, yeah, she has made several appearances in, like, mono green devotion deck or green red or green black devotion deck.
I think Nissa has had a large part to do with that.
Exactly.
Yes. Cause Nissa is awesome.
Nissa's pretty stupid. Yeah. Yeah. So let's just start with, I guess the white one because Wooburg. So, hey, look, they all cost 4 except for Thassa. I'd forgotten about that. For some reason, Purphoros in my mind cost 5.
I like how Purphoros was definitely the one at the beginning of previews that everybody was like, oh my god, it's going to break everything. And I was right there. And when I was building my Jund deck that I took to a Star City Open, I definitely had at least 3 Purphoros in there. And he's good, but sometimes he's awkward because he costs 4. And you're like, I want to play him and then play my creatures. But I'm not going to wait until turn 4 to play my creatures. So it's,
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's awesome still. And especially in a bigger format like EDH and multiplayer, where the game doesn't necessarily really get going until a couple turns in. Then he has the potential to inflict some maximum damage on each opponent.
Yeah, Purphoros and Thassa are the ones of the 5 single color gods whose static ability doesn't have an effect right now. You have to wait for something to happen. You know, you got to wait for your next upkeep to scry with Thassa. You got to wait to get another creature to get damage from Purphoros. But all the others have something that starts happening for you right now.
Mm-hmm.
A word?
Sweet.
Okay. Yeah, I think we don't really know where we're going with this.
No.
Well, I get the feeling when I said, yeah, so let's start with white because Wooburg, and Brian's like, Purphoros! So the Wooburg's out.
I was all set to talk about Purphoros, and I didn't even hear him say that. So Heliod, because white, and Wooburg.
We're already on Purphoros. So Purphoros is a god that I can see doing amazingly in, like, a red-green EDH deck. Like, something about Purphoros on the board, cast Scatter the Seeds, laugh your entire ass off.
Yep.
But there's really not much going on in Standard or maybe even Modern that allows you to just get all the ridiculous amounts of value out of his ability.
I mean, yeah, there are plenty of token-making effects, but...
Not competitive ones.
Yeah, but the thing is... You know, he's one of those things where, you know, I'd almost hate to say it because it sounds so goobery and elitist, but he's a spell that costs 4 that doesn't have an immediate impact on the board.
I mean, yeah, the only reason he's not going to be that is if you've already got devotion and he's already a creature. But as we've seen, all it takes is a little bit of removal to change that. You could have an interesting build with him and, like, all non-creature permanents to buff up his devotion, but then you're not getting the effect. So, he's just kind of awkward.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great, and he's an exciting design, but sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, Bioplasm is an exciting design, too, but who can tell you what that does off the top of their head?
I can.
Of course.
For some reason, I don't recognize that as a card. Whatever. Gatherer.
It's a crappy green rare. I don't know what it is. I just sorted it or filed it so before we got started. So that's why it jumps out in my mind.
It's a green rare.
Isn't that the one that's like plus X plus Y for some reason?
Oh, that thing. Holy crap.
I'll take that as a yes then.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So do we have more to say about Purphoros or do we go to Heliod?
Because, so, you know. In case no one... So the gods, let's real quick. The monocolored gods are all... not creatures, unless your devotion to their color is 5 or more. So once you hit 5, boom, it's a creature, and they're awesome. They're all indestructible, of course. All the gods are indestructible. And they all have some ability that's always on and some activated ability. So Purphoros, when another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Purphoros deals 2 damage to each opponent. That's why Scatter the Seeds is an old Ravnica common that says get 5 saps. 5 saps?
3.
3 saps. There we go. That. It costs 5.
3, yeah.
But you can always proliferate.
He's not wrong.
That is something you can do.
So yeah, Scatter Seeds costs 5 with Convoke, and you get 3 saps. Is that right?
Isn't it?
Hang on.
I don't think it's 4 tokens.
Scatter each creature.
Weren't we just talking about this last week?
Yeah, we probably were. Okay, yeah, 3 sapperlings. There we go. Good, good, good. And it's instant, which means each of your opponents just took 6 if you've got a Purphoros on the board. That's why that's funny. And then his activated ability, for 2 and a red, creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. He's got...
He gives everybody fire breathing.
He's got group fire breathing. Which sounds kind of kinky.
Everybody blow out the fire. Oh, no!
So yeah, that's what Purphoros does. He's awesome. And I really wish there was some way to make him more better.
Broken.
Yeah. Some way to make him more better in standard just so I could see him get played more. Cause I have to talk about what's big in standard every week.
It's your job.
Maybe if an assembled Legion deck came back.
Yeah, I've seen some of those lately, and there's been no Purphoros.
Dang.
Yeah, because, like Brian said, he costs 4, he's awkward. So, yeah. Excuse me.
Legacy goes back to Mirrodin, right?
Legacy goes back to Modern.
That's what I want.
Legacy goes back everywhere.
But if there was Thopter, there was some way to do lots of Thopters, then he would be awesome in that. Like clone the Thopters and all that good stuff.
Oh, dude, can we get Thopter?
Thopter Assembly.
Thopter Assembly. Is that? Yeah, that's the one. And Purphoros deck. Can we make this happen? Somebody get on that in Modern. Hurry up.
Pretty sure I have at least 2 EDH decks that have both of those cards in there.
I think you do, actually. Yeah, because you're a jerk.
Anyway, so we don't get too bogged down on just trying to stretch Purphoros. Maybe we should discussion okay. Elsewhere.
So back to Wooburg. So we got Heliod. So okay, wait. What's the Greek equivalent of Purphoros? He is Hephaestus, right?
Yes. Hephaestus.
Okay. So Heliod is the Zeus.
Yep. You like the Zeus? Also kind of Apollo, a little bit.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That. Where that came from.
You like the Zeus? Really
We'd like to apologize to everyone listening.
That caught me, and there was a delay. Oh my god. Okay, so, Heliod gives your other creatures vigilance, and you pay 2 white-white to get a 2/1 white cleric enchantment creature token. Oh man, I need a Heliod for my crappy cleric deck.
Well, I just thought that Heliod would be great for, remember Corey's, High Tide deck? Wasn't that the one that you tapped everything in his little vigilance creatures?
Oh, just stasis. Sort of,
it's just stasis.
That's what it was. And everyone was like, oh, because we all died to like a 1/1 creature. It was like it took 20 turns to kill you, but you couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah. Did he ever put white in that deck like we begged him to for Sarah Angels?
I don't know.
I hope he did. But yeah, Heliod would definitely help that. Freaking stasis.
I remember Austin built a mono white vigilance deck just to see what it would be like. And it was so aggravating to play against it. Even though it was just full of these, you know, crappy little common and uncommon creatures, it was really hard to beat. Cause you can't make any clear attacks. There's always blockers. Always.
So what was it about Heliod that fell out of favor?
It turned out that his token making ability was more expensive than it was worth it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he can make repeatable creatures and they have vigilance, but 4 mana for 2/1s when you could be doing other things. It's like, he seems to be one of those perfect control cards. You know, something that's really hard to remove that you can just put extra mana into to spend on a win condition. But he turned out to be a little too slow and not quite worth it.
Yeah, and in a format where Elspeth exists, paying 4 mana for 1/1 dude,
yeah. Like,
compared to Elspeth is just less. It's less. It's way less.
Less good. That.
It's less, basically less every way you can think of. And Heliod was also the first art they showed from this set as a teaser. I remember that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were like, this is going to be interesting.
Looks kind of Greek goddish. Everyone was like, shh, yes.
But it's a secret.
Exactly. Yeah, Heliod. Oh, go ahead.
Could it have something to do with enchantments? No,
I don't think anyone guessed that.
No.
I think there were a couple seeds of that in what was it, M14? There were some enchantment matters guys. But
Yeah. Because I remember us having that conversation of, there's an awful lot of X.
Not so many salamanders, yeah.
Hey, you got a new one in M15, Dirt.
There's finally a salamander? Woo!
Yeah, another Amphin dude. And it turns out they live on Chandelar, along with the Colonia and all of those things that are in the core set only nowadays. So yeah, anyway, off track. So Heliod, What do you do with Heliod? So other than lots of creatures that you don't want to tap.
You put him in a deck with white creatures in it. I mean, that's the main thing. He doesn't have any combo-y stuff going on for him.
Ooh, I know. You put him in a white-red deck with Purphoros, of course, and you use Mana Echoes. So eventually, your clerics, and then you have some way to filter colorless mana to white. So eventually, you have infinite cleric make... shut up, Chewie.
I do think that he would just be really great in a white weenie deck, especially if the white weenies had some sort of tap ability as like a secondary, like the soldiers, how there's the catapult, is the catapult master and the catapult squad. The master tap five and you chuck somebody off the board, and then the catapult squad tap two, deal two damage.
Right.
So them in conjunction with Heliod would be really awesome, because if you've got offensive soldiers that, you know, you just got this army of them, then they attack and they destroy. And then if something, you know, happens, oh, well, I've still got defenders and I can still like deal some damage that way.
Yeah. If your opponent wants to block some of your attackers, you just shoot all the blockers full of holes. And if they don't, you still have a bunch of untapped creatures to shoot all of their attackers full of holes if they try to attack you back.
So all in all,
like, you're describing
really...
my soldier deck.
Yeah.
Basically, yes, except more obnoxious, because Heliod is giving everyone vigilance. Well, no, you have mobilization to give everyone vigilance.
Yeah.
And mobilization is, oh! Heliod is slightly less, overly offensive than mobilization.
Only slightly though, and that's only because it costs one more mana to make a dude.
Yeah, and a play.
So for the most part, Heliod should more or less go into any deck that is aggressive in the traditional sense. The traditional sense meaning tap your creatures, go and smash someone's face. If you play white, he probably is a really good option to throw in, because that way you have defenders to fall back on.
Yeah, like if you're trying to swarm someone, not necessarily like any aggressive deck, because having vigilance for a truly like horribly aggressive deck doesn't matter. But if you're trying to swarm someone with a whole lot of dudes, then giving them all vigilance is just the worst thing ever for your opponent. Because at least maybe they can kill some of your attackers and win on the swing back, but not if all the attackers are standing there waiting for them.
Exactly.
So, and like Mike said, it's great for the a control deck too, because it just pumps out dudes. So you can wipe the board and then just pump out as many dudes as you want and kill your opponent, and it's fine. Yeah.
Just don't Biorhythm.
Ah.
Yeah.
Because Heliod goes back to being an enchantment.
It's true. Then you die, and we laugh at you.
And there's, you want to move on to Thassa?
Yeah, sure.
She's
Neptune?
The female version of Neptune.
Yeah, or
Poseidon, sorry.
There we go. Yeah, she's Poseidon with boobs. But she's not a merfolk, because she's a god. So, you think she just chooses to look like that because she's a god?
I think she chooses to look like that because she's the god of the sea, and the merfolk were most likely... With the way that the mythology of... the actual true mythology of Theros works out, the merfolk probably came first. So she was created as the goddess in their image because of their belief in her.
Oh.
Yeah, I think this was explained in Uncharted Realms article when Krufix was talking to one of his oracles.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Krufix is the only god who knows what the actual deal is behind Nyx and the gods and everything. We'll get to him eventually.
Yeah.
True. So yeah, Thassa is of course tearing up standards still. She, her always on ability is at the beginning of your upkeep, scry one, which, as everyone knows, untap, upkeep, draw. So that gives you amazing power to see what you're about to draw or find something better, or at least cycle away something you don't need to the bottom. And that is insane.
It's very nice.
And then her activated ability, one and a blue, target creature you control can't be blocked this turn. Well, that's perfectly fair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I like
actually,
it.
It's not perfectly fair. But, yeah, and she is the cheapest of the monocolored gods at two and a blue, just three mana. Which I'm sure is the reason that she is, or the main reason that she is so huge. Because you get her out way early, and it's just awful.
Yeah, I mean, even though she's one of the ones who isn't gonna have an immediate impact, you gotta wait around. There's a big difference between like Brian said, it just felt so bad to play Purphoros for four instead of a card that actually did something. But three, that's a lot easier to manage. You know, you don't feel as bad about that.
Yeah.
Spending a turn just paying three, because the game is still pretty early.
And there's so many creatures, and I haven't played enough of Theros Block to see all of them, but from Legacy terms, and I do mean Legacy, not Modern, but in terms of Legacy, there are so many creatures that if they hit the player, that craziness ensues. And the fact that you can make one of your creatures unblockable is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
I was gonna say crazy. But yes. I just think of the ninjutsu guys from Kamigawa Block. Just all the madness that came out of them, you know, hitting players, and you're like, oh! And that was the sound you made when they got ninjutsu'd in. With this, you don't have to ninjutsu in. You know, it's like, and he hit you.
Yeah, there's the... could you imagine using Thassa to make, I don't know, the original Rakdos unblockable? And just like activating the ability and looking at your opponent? So, Rakdos can't be blocked this turn, and you look up at them, and you see the dun-dun-dun horror face, you know?
Yeah, and then Dirk looks back with an accusing glare in his eye, and I look on the other sides of the table at Chewie and Brian and say, oh, crap.
It's like, Mike, you have doomed us both. But a thought with Thassa is that she would be great. And I know that the original Theros Block was really geared towards mono-colored, but if you mix it with either black or green in this, you know, black, you've got creatures that can, you know, do all kinds of destruction and everything, and green just has big creatures, so the fact you can make a big creature unblockable in the green side is terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, why, you know, hit someone and do something fancy when you can just hit someone and make them lose seven in one shot, you know?
Yeah.
That counts as fancy. Ta-da.
You know, you don't have to worry about trample and just completely smash someone's face in. Any other thoughts?
So we know Thassa's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's... I don't even know, because I don't actually watch coverage, I don't know how much her activated ability actually gets used in Standard.
Well, she's usually just a one of or two of nowadays, unless I'm talking out of my ass for this. But hey, damage is damage. I mean, Mono Blue Control decks, even though they might look like they take a minute to get going, will win really fast once they have the cards in place.
Well, yeah.
Except, hopes that.
Like, the Mono Blue Devotion decks, they're not even control decks. They're freaking blue aggro.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure she gets... I'm sure that gets activated just whenever possible.
Yeah, yeah. That ability matters.
Yeah. Okay.
So she goes in any blue deck that doesn't mean to just sit there and twiddle its thumb.
Well, she goes in those, too, because of the scry.
That's true.
So, yeah.
If you have a blue deck, put her in.
If you're running islands, why aren't you playing Thassa? Seriously. I have lost my freaking page with... Oh, here it is. All right, so next up is the other... And as far as Standard goes, these two bounce back and forth between which one's deck is betterer.
Mm-hmm.
And
sometimes, like, Erebos doesn't even appear in the deck.
Maybe that is true.
Yeah, maybe he's nowhere.
The Mono Black Devotion deck has actually evolved past Erebos.
Mm-hmm.
Which trips me out.
Because it just gets its cards from Underworld Connections.
Yeah. For half the mana and half the life. Hmm. Huh. So Erebos, his always on ability is your opponents can't gain life. That's also been less important here lately.
Mm-hmm. I always miss that when I play it. It's like, I remember at least a couple Commander games where, you know, stuff was happening and I forgot that he couldn't make you guys gain life, but you guys remembered. And like, and like, hey, and you gain five, and you're like, no. It's like, what? Why? Because of your Erebos. Oh. Oh.
Well, that guy's pretty good.
Yeah, like, that's a pretty good card.
Somebody had to put this in a deck. And his activated ability is pay one and a black and two life to draw a card. Which, and since that doesn't require tapping, you can just draw as many cards as you feel like losing life. And that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And he's also, I mean, let's not forget, we haven't actually talked about it very much, but these things actually do become big-ass creatures, too. So.
Right.
There's that. And since the Mono Black Devotion deck is devoted, no pun intended, to getting Black Devotion up, he's going to be a creature a fair amount of the time, so.
Right, yeah.
And his Greek god is Hades, right? Hades,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. I actually like a little more how they've portrayed him through some of the Uncharted realms, where he's more just, he's just the god of the dead. He's not vengeful or spiteful or anything like that. They don't take the Disney approach to Hades.
Hey, but what, then, was my hair out?
But then in the books, he's like, oh, you know, I hate everybody, I despair, everything, blah, blah, blah. He's the typical bad guy. Just because he's the god of the dead does not mean that he is evil. So, I don't know. A little disappointed. Yeah.
In several Western mythologies, you'll see the god of the dead isn't evil, but he might be just not a good person to work with. Usually because he's upset with his other sibling because he got stuck with that job. You know, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
His job sucks.
Yeah, he's just annoyed because, you know, he got stuck with the crap job and he's always busy and he doesn't have time for the other nonsense.
So is the reason why he sees so much play is because of the card draw?
Yeah, I mean, necropotence is always a strong effect. So.
It's more like greed, but.
Well, life for cards.
But like Mike said, in the Mono Black Devotion deck, Underworld Connections, which the enchant land that goes on the land and says, I think you tap the land and pay a life to draw a card.
Right. Yeah.
So you're essentially paying one and a life instead of two and two life.
But you're also giving up the land.
True, but you can only do it once a turn.
But in a deck where Erebus is going to be a creature, very often, hey, 5/7 indestructible for 4 mana. Pretty good.
Seems fine. And which, again, is another reason I don't understand why it's gone away so much.
And with the mirror match, you know, not the opponent not gaining life off of their gray merchant is very important. So.
Yes.
And no, Chewie, I don't really know either. That's the metagame for you, you know? It shifts like the tides.
Oh, yeah. So let's see. He's also got that badass whip, though. Look at the whip in that art. Oh, my God.
Yeah, the whip is kind of neat.
it is nice that the monocolored all get their own weapons. The multicolored don't get weapons. They get not weapons.
I would have liked to have seen the weapons for some of them if cards were made. I think that would have been cool, but that would have taken up too much space
that's true.
That does beg the question of what kind of weapons some of them would use, though. So, yes, like
if Farah's water jug.
Oh no, she's gonna tip it over.
Okay,
pure land water entity anyway. Love.
Okay, so one more monocolored god, Nylia, god of the hunt. Her static ability: other creatures you control have trample, which is great.
Yep.
And her activated ability, 3 in a green, target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, which is, I won't say great, but it's really good. Especially when the creature already has trample.
Yeah, and it makes combat impossible for the opponent. So, it's like, do I block it? What do I block it with? I don't care, it's gonna die.
Well, the thing is that for, how much was Overrun? Overrun 6, isn't it?
5.
5.
5.
It's
so for
costed. It's
yeah.
Stupid.
So for essentially 4, you have a weak overrun, is what this is, because they'll have trample and +2/+2.
This is only target creature, so it's not all your creatures.
Oh, not even. Whoa. Definitely not as good as overrun.
Dirk was reading a much better card than the rest of us.
Well, it was for whatever reason I was thinking.
Purphoros was creatures you control.
Other creatures you get. Yeah.
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 That's what I was reading what I was thinking was that other creatures.
Oh, you press the two abilities together.
She doesn't need to have that ability. Oh, dear Lord. She was really popular when the Mono Green Devotion deck, not the one that's starting to come around now, but very early after Theros, was popular. Popular. It had the Arbor Giant.
Arbor Colossus.
Arbor Colossus, and this was the first deck to really showcase the power of Nykthos, and she turned all the stupid stuff into even stupider stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, she
And she's coming back around again in red green decks and green decks.
I will say, looking at these now, having read the books from a flavor perspective, all of the mono-colored gods are actually fairly prominent. The only one you don't actually see very much of is Erebos, and that's because none of the characters are in the Realm of the Dead. But all these other ones actually figure in fairly prominently, especially Nylia and Heliod, and so it was interesting to see her character drawn out. She shoots Xenagos with an arrow while he's still immortal. And he, like, plucks it out. He breaks off the arrow head and keeps it in his chest to show that, yes, the gods can hurt me, but they can't kill me or whatever. Something, something, something.
Dark side.
Because, yes, I am a badass, and screw you. That's why.
For some reason, I'm having the darndest time coming up with Nylia's Greek name for her equivalent.
Artemis.
Artemis.
Artemis. Dang it.
We're all on the board.
Harg. So
Artemis.
So yeah, Nylia is another one that goes in any deck where you're playing green.
Green.
And big you have things. Creatures.
She's not too specialized.
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't like playing with Brawn? How many times are we like, all right, I'll block here, and they're like, all right, you take this. Oh, because Brawn's in the graveyard. And this is a little easier to keep track of because it's actually on the battlefield, but it still has that same sense of, oh, well, it's not attacking me, so out of sight, out of mind, interface.
Yeah, so the green ones, I mean, the green ones, the monocolored ones, they're the easy ones.
Yes.
For a variety of things. They're easy because their abilities are all relatively straightforward. They're easy to figure out what Greek equivalent there is. They're all pretty simple.
Yeah.
The rest of these get a little weird.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go into the ones from Born of the Gods next, or... Yeah. Okay.
So let's do the ally color ones.
Okay.
So, Ephara, god of the polis. The polis? Polis.
Polis, yeah. Polis.
Okay. So
like
for
Grepolis.
Like Acropolis. Okay. Yeah. So for the multicolored gods, their devotion... They're not a creature unless your devotion to both of their colors is, or either of their colors, I guess, is 7 or more.
Either is a better word in this instance. Yeah.
So, like, if you have...
I would use both. Well, I don't know what word to use. Sorry.
If your devotion to blue and or white.
I'd say either, because if you've got 7 blue or 7 white, but that is confusing. Yeah.
The ability, the name of the way it's templated is devotion to white and blue, devotion to red and green.
Yeah. And that probably is actually the simplest way to put it. Congratulations, Wizards, you actually found the easiest way to say something and put that way on the card. Kudos. That's not always the case.
He's not wrong. So they have the devotion.
And except for just a couple of them, they only have one ability.
Right. Yes. So, for instance, Ephara. Yes. Oh, go ahead.
At the beginning of each upkeep, if you had another creature enter the battlefield under your control last turn, draw a card. She is the goddess of civilization. She's the goddess that overlooks, well, the polis. Mm-hmm. She inspires inhumanity and the civilized races, not to sound racist, the desire to congregate and to build structures. She's the goddess, I think, of art and, you know, civilization. Hey, let's all sit down and drink some tea. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to flood your world and you're going to have to go into the past and get a spaceship and...
Spoilers. So is she's sort of an Athena.
Yeah.
Sort of Athena, sort of, Sort of Hera, a little.
Sort of Hera, yeah.
A little bit.
Earth in the home. Because Vesta was uniquely Roman, wasn't she? That wasn't really...
There was a Hestia.
Vesta. Oh, Hestia, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So the multicolored gods are where they start to squeeze them, mix them together.
Right.
And then...
Like Heliod, we actually touched on this, but Heliod is the head god, but he's also the goddess, the god of the sun.
So well, it's like a
Zeus's role, but a... Apollo's thing. It's a bit
complicated when you read the books. He wants to be the head of the pantheon, but it's not entirely clear. It's clearly disputed, and the others are not entirely complicit with this. So he's less of a Zeus specifically, and I apologize for not saying this earlier, but he's less of a Zeus specifically. Like, you know, everybody just recognizes he's the head, and he's more of a scheming Apollo, you might put it that way. If anybody is close to being the head of the Pantheon other than him, then it's Krufix.
I wouldn't say that. Krufix is too mysterious.
We'll get to him when we get to him.
Yeah.
He moves in mysterious ways. So,
and he's not well understood.
So he's Bono. Okay.
Just like that, yes.
Yes.
As far as
it's a U2 joke. Okay, sorry.
Okay.
I got it. You can keep it.
As far as Efara seeing any sort of play, I mean, you know, obviously casual. It's a very Johnny card. You want to try and make
she
it
sees
work.
Serious play. Drawing cards is good stuff.
Not much anymore.
Well, I mean, she was only ever a one of anyway when she saw serious play.
That's true.
Because she's one of those cards where if you draw it, you want to craft around it, but you don't really need it most of the time.
Yeah, it's difficult because you can't be dependent on having her. But the deck wants to have her so to work. So
she was played in the blue white control deck because her Elspeth? You're gonna be having creatures enter the battlefield under your control, so draw a card.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah.
Okay.
But and of course, when everyone saw her, they're like, "Oh my god! To get maximum use, I must have creatures that enter the battlefield during your turn." So I can draw a card every turn, because, oh god, my head.
Yeah.
And then they reprinted Raise the Alarm, and nobody cared. They're like, who's Efara anyway?
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. But, again, she's one of those that I can easily see people, all of these I can easily see, I think all of them anyway, someone playing in an EDH deck, because, hey, look, I can draw an extra card every turn. Ding, ding.
Sure.
And because so many of the multicolored ones are weird build around me cards, and because they're multicolored, they're also very well suited to be commanders themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And she also plays really well with Heliod.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of your turn, I'll make a cleric. Hey, it's my turn. Oh, look, I had a creature draw a card. Murr, murr. It's nice.
And if you had Thassa, then, hey, before I draw the Karma Scry.
Ba bam! Oh, this card sucks. Let me get a new card. Yeah, now I'm drawing. Yeah, okay. So she's kind of boring, actually. Who is the next allied color? Phoenix. What in the hell is Phoenix? As far as the Greek equivalent. Loki. No, wait.
that's not. I don't know.
In terms of title, Loki would probably be correct.
I mean, there were several. He's more like several minor gods pressed together. Nemesis, Eris, stuff like that.
No.
Who's Nemesis?
Who's the Greek the Greek god of wine?
That's Dionysus.
Yeah.
No, he's like party time more than deception.
But there was supposed to be. Oh, it was Bacchus. That was what I was thinking.
Isn't he just?
Wasn't Bacchus the same thing? Same one?
Yeah.
Bacchus and Dionysus are the same.
Yeah. Well, the thing it was the whole about party time, but hey, let's have some. Yeah, never mind.
So
it was something else.
But so he's the god of deception. There's not really a strong correlation. In the books, you meet a disciple of his once, and the disciple reaches into Elspeth's mind and says, "Holy crap, you're better than a god because you can actually leave this world," and it kind of blew this acolyte's mind. And that actually became the beginning of a lot of problems for Elspeth because the gods thought that they were the top of the food chain, but they're kind of still just stuck in this one reality. He doesn't otherwise have a lot of dealings, and in fact, Phoenix actually releases this acolyte from his service, kind of brutally.
I'm actually poking around the primordial Greek deities, like, you know, Kronos and Erebus and Hypnos, and I'm finding nothing there either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
those are more like forces of nature rather than...
Yeah.
I'm not finding anything there.
The concept of untruth is a very slippery subject. If anything, the gods in Greek mythology are very much like mortals in that they have emotions, they have lust, and they have love toward each other and hatred. And so it's more of an aspect of their personality. You might see one god represent lust in Aphrodite, but ultimately they all have that essentially. So,
I mean, because he's also, I'm sure he's also the god of thieves, you know, that was one of Hermes' attributes.
Oh, that is true.
So about this guy in particular.
Oh yeah. I mean, what's he do?
Creatures you control have tap. Target player puts the top X cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard, where X is this creature's toughness. And of course he's a 4/7, so he's actually got the highest toughness of all the gods. He's tied with the other 7 toughness gods at the bottom.
Erebus also.
And Erebus, yeah. But so he helps his own ability along if you can make him into a creature. I remember having him at the Born of the Gods pre-release, the one I did with Mike on that Sunday, I think, and actually milling a guy out with this guy and some other high toughness guys and using Triton tactics. Whew, good times. this guy plus in the set that he was in, he plays so well with Inspired, it's not even funny. But as far as constructed, it's tougher. And even in ADH, it's, unless you're going to be milling yourself, it's so hard to mill people without infinite mill, like still silly shenanigans.
Now, if you're playing like one-on-one ADH or French Commander, then I can imagine with all of the mill cards in Magic, making him the commander of an ADH mill deck is probably pretty simple.
Probably, but just from a numbers perspective, it's easier to deal 40 damage than it is to mill 100 cards. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it's really tricky.
I'm building a commander deck.
Go, all right, go right ahead.
I'm gonna kill Brian and then I'm gonna take it apart.
I'm
right there on the spot and be like, and I forfeit.
So the student has become the master.
No.
So, I don't really have a whole lot else to say about him. I mean, I've played with him. I think he's cool. I then traded him immediately to Mike, I think. Or somebody. I think it was to Mike.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to really have much versatility other than... he is very specific in what he does.
Devoted to what he does.
Yeah. I mean, he's really good at what he does, but in terms of versatility and everything, there's just not really anything there.
He's got that curse that some milling cards do of he's so focused on that that if you have to switch gears and start having to, you know, deal damage or something, he's like, I don't know what to do.
I have 4 power.
I'm indestructible.
I have worked at this my whole life. And then somebody walks into his office and he's like, so... Phoenix, yeah. I'm gonna have to move you to the basement. You're gonna be working with Gary. Yeah, that'd be great. If you'd get me that TPS report. I'm sorry, I'm mixing worlds now. But you get what I mean. He does the one thing and he does it well, but that's it. Mogus does something well too.
Mogus is my favorite.
Well then why don't you tell us about
him? Okay. So Mogus is the black red one. He only costs 4, and his ability is at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, Mogus deals 2 damage to that player unless he or she sacrifices a creature. And I was really tripped out that this did not see hardly any constructed play.
I put 3 copies of this guy into a Jund deck that I took to a Star City IQ, and I did okay. I didn't do great, and I took him to a couple FNMs, and everybody would ask, are you happy with how he does? And usually that was the games when I didn't play him, because if I played him, they knew. And if he's played out early enough, he's really, really good. I mean, especially against several of the blue-white control decks that used to be very popular with the Sphinx's Revelation. they actually had to use removal on him, and that had to be very specialized because he's indestructible and not a creature most of the time. So he actually pulls a lot of weight. The problem is that the decks that don't care about him really don't care about him. They're like, all right, I'll take two. Whatever.
I'll sack one of Elspeth's soldiers.
Ooh. Yeah.
I mean, the most direct comparison is with Desecration Demon. With Desecration Demon, if you don't sacrifice a creature, you're taking a lot more than two damage.
Yeah. This guy's a little harder to remove than Desecration Demon, but there's not an immediate payoff if they can't answer him.
Right.
So,
granted, with seven power, he really pays off if you can wake him up.
Yeah. And I did that once or twice, and it was really nice to go this guy into Sire of Insanity. That was really good. Is there a Greek equivalent? Comparing him to Iroas, who we'll get to in a little bit, they're the twins. Mm-hmm. And they're both about battle, but Iroas is more about honorable combat and war and victory and you know, saluting your soldiers and whatever. And Mogus is more tear the opponent limb from limb and bathe in his blood and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Mogus is just more about straight up war. Yeah. So he's the most like Ares when you compare Mogus and Eros. Eros has some Athena in him.
Yeah, Eros is more the other half of Athena than than Ares, yeah. But Mogus is definitely Ares. He's like, kill everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, Ares was just, you know, the god of straight up war, you know, and his, you know, the Roman Mars was, I think, might have originally been some kind of agricultural god, and he went from being a god of the field to the god of the battlefield specifically. And, you know, that's what Ares and Mogus are, the battlefield, the fighting.
Cool. Yeah.
And actually, on this Wikipedia list of Greek mythological figures, under Ares, it says god of war, bloodshed, and violence. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In, okay. I know I'm going to get some flack for this.
Oh, Lord.
But in Hercules, the Something Journeys, the Something Adventures.
With Kevin Sorbo?
Kevin Sorbo, yeah. What was that called? Hercules or something.
The Legendary Journeys?
That sounds right.
Wasn't which anyone that was really into Greek mythology probably watched it to both appreciate it and realize how much they got wrong. But unlike a lot of the stuff, at least they made Hera to be a bad person, which the problem with some adaptations of Hercules, like the Disney version, is Hera's too nice. And in this version, Hera's a B. So,
like Gisela.
Like, was that, did we talk about that on, I don't think we talked about that on the air.
Was that on the air? I can't remember if that was on the air.
That was the earlier conversation that you should have recorded, but you screwed up.
Yeah. Pizza. So Ares was a big figure on that show, right? Mm-hmm. He was one of the major protagonists / anti-hero / you know, he was good when it was convenient, bad when it wasn't convenient.
I did not know that, because Mom watched that show because Kevin Sorbo's pretty.
It was good.
I did not, though.
And I kind of laughed a little bit when I saw photos of Dwayne Johnson as Hercules because he had the Kevin Sorbo hair.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, now I can't unsee it. Thank you, Mike.
I mean, that's what Hercules looks like now. Looks like Kevin Sorbo. Duh.
See, my brain is still in Marvel Hercules.
Oh.
So... And Marvel Hercules always looked like the Hercules that I pictured in my head when I would read the old myths.
Yeah, a big manly Greek man, yeah.
Yeah, so like the whole Kevin Sorbo thing just refuses to break into my subconscious. And I'm happy about that.
Does Hercules look like the one who was in New York?
I don't get it.
Oh, God.
I don't get
These
it.
Youngins aren't going to have any idea what you're talking
Hercules
about.
In New York was Arnold Schwarzenegger's first speaking role.
Yeah.
And for the theatrical release, they dubbed over his dialogue because his accent was so thick.
Wow.
Several of us got together in Stu and Chris's room to watch it one night, and we decided to watch it with, you know, the dubbed audio. And after just a few scenes, Stu was like, "I'm sorry, I got to turn the subtitles on." None of us could understand. We were having a really seriously difficult time understanding what Arnold was saying. The subtitles helped a lot.
Damn it, that's funny.
Right, so anything else about Mogus?
Nah.
No.
I like him. His art is freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He either made the Minotaurs in his own image, or they just gravitate. Or they produced, as Mike said, because the beliefs and following and, I guess, devotion, for lack of a better word, of the inhabitants of Theros gave rise to the gods. He probably was what the Minotaurs dreamt of when they dreamt of glory and gore and everything nasty. So, that they worshipped.
One of us. So let's talk about the upstart.
Do we want to do him next? Because he, from a storyline perspective, he's completely unlike all the others. But from a card perspective,
exactly the same.
It still counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Xenagos, god of revels. His Greek equivalent is, how do you pronounce that?
Dionysus.
I said Dionysius, but other people, you can say Dionysus, that's fine.
Yeah, it depends on where you look. Like, I'm looking at, again, on the Wikipedia page, it's spelled Dionysus, S-U-S, and I always thought there was an I in there too. But maybe it depends on your translation. Huh.
You always say Bacchus.
Or you could always say Bacchus, yeah.
It's hard to mess that one up.
Just ask Arnold.
Bacchus. Who was the... Oh, Bacchus was the Greek equivalent. Okay, duh. But anyway. So yeah, he is the god of revelry and parties and... let's see, what does Dionysus say? Wine, parties, and festivals, madness, chaos, drunkenness, drugs, and ecstasy. And no, not ecstasy the drug. Ecstasy the state of mind.
And that was the reason why I thought Phoenix sort of would be that, is because it was madness as part of his demeanor.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So Xenagos and Dionysus are basically let's get drunk and screw.
Yeah.
Go to a party, we'll get drunk, we'll get naked, we'll roll around, it'll be great. And somehow, I didn't read the books, and I don't really want to know, but somehow Xenagos was able to party so hard that he became the god of parties.
he's
every frat boy's dream.
Something they touched on in the books that's not really explained in the cards is, for a red-green mage and a satyr, he was actually really adept at mind magic. Not on the same level as Jace as far as reading people's minds, but he was incredibly good at influencing people. And he said that his magic had grown so strong, he actually had gotten bored with it. He preferred to challenge himself by just trying to win people over without using magic, and he still got his way most of the time. And over the course of the books, before he ever becomes a god, he gets the Minotaurs to do what he wants. He gets the Nylea to do pretty much what he wants, and even ends up with an arrow in his chest and walks away. He gets Elspeth to do what he wants. He even recognizes her as a planeswalker. He's like, oh, she's a planeswalker, and she meets him, and she has no idea who he is or what he is. And he manages to manipulate the Minotaur attack on what's the Spartan city? The
Eros. No, and, that, I'm stupid. That's not the name of the city.
Annex and Symeet are the king and queen.
Yeah,
that's freaking place. Hell. Acroa, Acroan, Acroa,
Akros.
Akros. And specifically so that the Minotaurs would get wiped out, and so everybody else would party, but it wasn't just the partying. He'd woven all this complex magic, and he'd done so much stuff to set this up, and he had layers upon layers of stuff so that he would basically ascend to being a god. But once he became a god, unlike the others, because nobody really knew who he was, to secure his godship, he actually trapped Nyx-born creatures in a mystical fire thingy in Nyx, and fed off of their life force to sustain his divinity. And when Elspeth and Ajani get there and they start freeing them, those Nyx-born creatures and whatnot, from the mystical fire thingy, he starts to get weaker and pissed off. It's weird. He used, from a player perspective, he used to be a planeswalker, and he knows exactly what Elspeth knows, which is that there are other worlds. But whereas she specifically searches out the gods of this world because she believes that they can be a force for good, he sees them once he travels beyond the world and he comes back, he sees the people's devotion to the gods as the ultimate betrayal, that these gods are pretending to be bigger than they are. And whereas as Johnny, we see him around the time Elspeth dies as taking that in a different turn and starting to talk to people and say, hey, don't believe in them. Xenagos kind of takes the attitude of, well, if they can do it, so can I. And why can't I be a god?
Anything you can do, I can do
anything better than you. So he becomes a god. But it doesn't last, as we know from DSI.
Yeah.
But it is rumored that, you know, because he did, his body returned to Theros before he died, because if you die in Nyx, your essence just disappears forever, that he could be in the underground and maybe he and Elspeth are pissed off at each other or something. I don't know. You!
No, partying you. Together.
They're forging so, their masks across so from each other, and like Elspeth will reach over and knock his mask in the floor, and whoever's in charge will be like, hey! And he'll be like, she did it! And she'll be like, because she's like, you know. Anyway.
So he does represent partying, but he definitely represents some of the darker aspects that you just talked about. The revelry and the ecstasy and like taking it way too far. And the irony is, because he wasn't born of the people's belief, he's not entirely devoted to his own aspect. Whereas these others, you know, Mogus, god of war all the time. That is his personality. Xenagos is a little more complex, and he believes in all this revelry, but only so far as it suits his own desires. So
if he got tired and wanted to go take a nap for, you know, a year or so and not party, he can do that. Whereas it's not, whereas it's not like Phoenix can start telling the truth for a year.
Right. You know? Yeah. That's actually, I know you're joking around a little bit, but that's actually pretty good.
I was trying to put it in terms that make perfect sense, and I like that. So let's talk about his card.
Yeah, we didn't get to that. As a card, Xenagos is the real deal.
He's real. He's good. What's he do then, Mike? You're so smart.
His ability is, at the beginning of combat on your turn, another target creature you control gains haste and gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is that creature's power.
Yeah. He was also in my Jun deck, and literally no one had to ask me how he was working out for me. Yeah. There was, I think, like one game I lost while I had him out, and it was I was going to lose no matter what. So,
yeah, he is definitely amazing. He saw a lot of play in red green decks. It's one of the few times where you can see two different versions of a character in the same deck, because anytime you saw Xenagos, God of Rebels, you could find I forgot his planeswalker name, but you could find at least two copies of those too.
Yeah.
And it's really,
it's too bad we never saw a third version. That could have been really.
Well, you did. It was the deck that you had to play against at game day.
Challenge
deck.
Or the whatever. On it.
Yeah.
So he was a planeswalker, then he was a god, and then he was an entire challenge unto himself, which is pretty cool.
So he's a lot better than Xenagos the Stabbed.
Play against this deck.
Xenagos the Bloody Smear. But yeah, his ability is just stupid. It turns any creature into a massive threat.
Yeah, even if the creature just has 3 power, that's a significant bonus. Any higher than that, and it's just wild.
The haste.
Well, the fact that just off of Xenagos himself, you get a +6/+6
haste. He can't do it to himself. It says another target creature, so he can't do it.
It does, doesn't it? Land. Yeah,
that's important. But if you let an opponent untap with this, then you have to fear everything they play or could play.
Yeah, if he reaches for land in his first main phase, then you have to pucker.
Yeah.
It's a requirement. It says it on the card if you look closely.
This is one of those ones where it makes playing your stuff prior to combat better.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last allied colored god.
It took a while with that one, but, you know, he was more of an interesting case. Tara Metra, yeah.
By the way, damn it, Jars.
What did Jars do?
He just popped up and said, Sticker!
Sticker!
So, yes, Karametra, god of harvests, is essentially Demeter, right?
Yeah, Demeter.
Demeter. Mm-hmm. I always mispronounce. No matter which way I choose to go, whoever I'm saying it to says it the other way.
I've always heard it Demeter.
I have too. And I always thought that was wrong.
It's the mother of Persephone, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Goddess of the seasons. And the harvest and the grains
and the tractors. Grains,
and the bread and
the yoke.
Farmers.
So yeah, she is the green white one. She costs 5. And whenever you cast a creature spell, you may search your library for a forest or plains card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, and shuffle. That is sick. That is really sick. But she already costs 5.
She already costs 5. Now, I mean, you know, you can still, I mean, people still play Explosive Vegetation even though you've already got 4 or 5 mana. So, and it's the fact that it's tacked onto a creature, so you're already getting something good. But is this the same sort of advantage you get with some of these other gods?
No.
No.
No, it's going to take a long game for it to start paying off in a substantial way.
Yeah.
But when it does, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And
like Jack swore up and down that this was the commander card that was that just tickled him to no end out of the set.
Oh, she's a wonderful commander.
Yeah.
I mean, in a format that is, I mean, I hear a lot of people say commander's just big spells. It's not just big spells, but you definitely have the ability to go big in that format. Yeah. It's a lot more inclined toward that than other formats. And, you know, in that format, you know, you want to get up to 10 mana because then you can cast all your stuff. So it is significant that it says cast, though. What were you going to say, Dirk?
I was saying that Sakara Metro is more suited to a commander deck than a standard deck.
Yeah, because I mean, in standard especially, once you get up to the 5 mana you need to cast her, the bonus isn't as significant. And she doesn't trigger off of tokens or anything.
And I mean, and you can build good casual 60 card decks with her as well, but for constructed competitive formats, her payoff just takes too long to show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say about her, unless you guys do. I haven't had a whole lot of experience with her.
Unfortunately, no.
Okay then. Okay. So, enemy colored creature gods from the last one. Journey to Nyx. Journey into Nyx. Journey through the Nyx. Did you know that the in the primordial gods section here, the goddess of night is actually named Nyx?
Yeah.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Loser.
And there is an Erebus.
Yeah, there's an Erebus, who is god of darkness and shadow. There's a Thalassa, who is the personification of the sea and consort of Pontos.
Mm-hmm.
And Pontus is the god of the sea, father of the fish and other sea creatures. This is before the...
He's Aquaman.
No. Yes. This is what did you call them, Mike? Forces of nature.
Yeah.
These were pretty much around before the gods for the most part.
Yeah, in the genealogies, they're the primal elements that make up the world.
Okay.
The sons and daughters of chaos and Gaia.
Exactly. Sort of. Except they're the parents of the Titans. These were apparently equal to chaos and Gaia.
No. Right. Uranus and Gaia are the parents of the Titans.
That's correct. Chaos is nothingness.
I thought it was Chaos and Nyx that were the parents of the primordials.
Oh yeah, it was Arana. Okay, sorry. I was in the wrong. When Brian said, Chaos. So Chaos was.
It's been a long time since I was last in school.
It's true, yeah. And I never, that's a lie. I did take a mythology class my freshman year. But anyway, okay, enough of that. So let's go to.
I didn't mean to turn it into an episode of Mari. You're the father.
I'd like to see that victory dance. Like, Xenaghost, you are not the father.
Woo! He would party so hard he'd become a god again. So, the first one is Athreos, god of passage.
And I remember previewing this card. I remember saying, this card's going to be amazing in the nuts, and it is amazing in the nuts, but it is not broken any format in half, even slightly.
And that makes me sad. Flo, who is, I don't know if she listens to this show or just Monday Night Magic, but she writes for Karchark. On occasion, she wrote about a black-white humans deck. Do you remember the black-white humans deck?
I remember the black-white humans decks.
Yeah, that used a bunch of humans and, what was
sacrifice
the...
Sacrifice specs and...
What was the guy who turned them into zombies?
The Xanthra Necromancer.
Yeah, the Xanthra Necromancer. She threw Athreos in that deck, and the entire deck became stupid. Just stupid.
It was already pretty good. I got beat down by the deck pretty hard. If you stumble on mana, it will just take you apart.
Oh, yeah.
But without Xanthra... Go ahead.
The addition of Athreos in the deck. So what Athreos says is whenever another creature you own dies, return it to your hand unless target opponent pays 3 life. Which means either you're bolting them or you just never-ending dudes. And she built the deck and put it in the Card Shark article. And it showed up once or twice at the very beginning of the Journey into Nyx Standard. And then it just disappeared. I guess everything else was just working better somehow for some reason. And every once in a while, a Black-White Humans deck would show up. And sometimes there was even an Athreos in it, but it was very rare. And it made me sad.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the ones who seems like he should be working out a lot better than he is, but
maybe
it's just not happening for some reason.
Maybe in a couple months we'll see a resurgence.
I think he, just by reading what he does and thinking that he would work out really well in a Innistrad block stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that the humans thing that you guys are talking about?
Well, we're talking about something a little different.
Part of the way the Aristocrats deck killed, you know, before Innistrad rotated out, and it was through Blood Artist and Falconwrath Noble, who'd start draining your opponent whenever one of your creatures dies. And that's something that, of course, I know for a fact the Black and White Humans deck would love to have something like that, but that'd be just a little too good for it.
Could you imagine if this had been printed at when Blood Artist was still legal in Standard? Holy God. That would be just the worst. I mean, the best, which would turn into the worst.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But what is he? So he's not, because Chiron is it? Chiron? Is that, what's his name?
Charon? Charon?
Wait.
Which one was the one who ferried?
Yeah, that's
him.
Yeah, Charon. How do you pronounce that? Chiron. And no, not Chiron was someone that messed with Hercules, I think.
He ferried the dead across the River Styx to the underworld.
But he wasn't a god himself. He was just
he was an immortal figure.
Yeah.
He was one of those very minor deities that were still important.
Yeah. And that's kind of what his role is here. He's a minor god, but in this case he actually is a deity.
This is one of Hermes' functions. I forgot about that.
Oh yeah, Hermes did also do that.
Yeah, Hermes is the messenger of your gods and a psychopomp who leads the souls of the dead into the afterlife. I completely forgot about that.
Yep.
In the books, he pretty much just hangs out in a cave that's the entrance to the underworld, and he ferries the souls across, essentially. The staff that you see him use there is essentially a bridge that he lowers, and you walk across it to go to the underworld.
Well, it's not sweet of him.
It's not entirely clear, like, if you didn't want to go to the underworld, you know, could they take you? I'm not sure exactly how that would work.
Get on the boat.
What if you said, nah? But he's seen incredibly rarely. He shows up actually in the very first couple pages of the first book. Daxos, yes. Legendary creature. His mother is concerned because he's a boy and he's not speaking at all. And it turns out he's just a very powerful oracle and he hears all of the gods in his head. She's like, maybe if I go take him to see a god, he'll fix him. So she takes him to see Athreos. Because that's smart.
That's my first choice.
Thanks, Mom.
And it ends up costing her life and scarring him for his whole life because she died. Because as soon as he got close, Erebos was like, hey, I want that kid. He's pretty smart. And Erebos, again, is a bad guy. So he says, Athreos, go get me the kid. And he's like, yes, my master, or something. And but Daxos gets away, but he's scarred for life. So.
I'm imagining Athreos' lurch all of a sudden.
Right?
he has very little importance. I mean, you'd think a figure like that would be very important. There's an event called the Silence of the Gods, I think, where after Elspeth slays Polychronos, all the gods are actually sucked back into Nyx by Kruffix, who just says, all right, enough meddling with the humans. Just kind of leave them alone. And later, Elspeth and Daxos visit the cave of Athreos. And it looks like all the souls are just kind of stuck there. Miserable.
Like, yeah, where's the freaking bus? Can we get on the bus?
Sorry,
when you said, get on the boat, my brain pictured a comedian who's talking about, in Titanic, you know, they just met, so they've got the fire and the passion. Imagine if they had been an old married couple, you know, and they're, he's standing there, get on the damn boat, Rose! Anyway.
What?
Just get on.
Get on the.
I don't care!
What Mo?
Anyway, so enough of Athreos. He's awesome. I'm sad that he doesn't see more play, and I need to get one.
Maybe soon.
Next up is Keranos, God of Storms, who is Zeus.
Also awesome.
Zeus-ish, with the whole storms thing. Not so much Head of the Gods thing, but the storms thing. He's Zeus, Zeus-alicious.
Yes.
And I love this guy, and everybody loves this guy, it turns out. I got one at the pre-release. And I heard at the Modern PTQ that lots of people had him in their modern decks, and that makes me just tickled beyond all reason. But he costs 3 a red and a blue, and he says, reveal the first card you draw on each of your turns. Whenever you reveal a land card this way, draw a card. So you draw that land. Whenever you reveal a non-land card this way, Keranos deals 3 damage to target creature or player. So you either draw the land or you bolt something.
And so I know there's no downside.
There is no downside. Other than they get to see it and woohoo. So I remember ranting and raving about how great he was after the pre-release because he was in my deck and he's amazing. But now, like I said, some of the modern blue-red decks, and there are a bunch of different modern blue-red decks, are putting Keranos in there because if you can hit 5 mana, and the modern blue-red decks are pretty slow. You know, it's either Splinter Twin or Delver or some sort of control deck. So he is just inevitability.
Yeah. I mean, it's either, hey, I drew a card, or, hey, I drew a card, it's a lightning bolt, have one.
For free. So, yeah.
And sometimes you draw a card and it actually is a lightning bolt, and you're like, woo!
From a storyline perspective, his influence is shown more than anything else. Cymeed, the wife of Annex, is a very powerful prophet, but she actually has not devoted herself to or pledged herself to any god. But it's made clear that Keranos really wants her, like in a big manly way.
So he is Zeus.
Shower of gold, baby. Shower of gold. And she says,
a couple times in the novels that if she was to pledge herself to any of them, it would be him because she could appreciate his thoughtful yet capricious nature. The fact that he brought brilliance and destruction by the same token. So.
Yeah, he's not just the storm god. And Theros, he's also the god of prophecy and insights. And he shares with Purphoros being one of the gods associated with creativity.
Yeah. He's inspiration, but he's kind of violent inspiration. He's not like you sit back and you meditate for a while and the answer will come to you. It's that you wake up in the middle of the night and you just had the best idea ever. That's him. As Cymeed goes to his temple to pray for a while and is literally smacked backward by a concussive force into the wall, which knocks her out. And that gives her the vision she needs to see what's coming. So it's not gentle. But it's powerful, like him.
Oh, yeah. So let's see. Next we have Farika, God of Affliction, who is the black-green one.
I'm having a lot of trouble coming up with a specific god associated with medicine.
Well, technically, Apollo was a jack of many trades, and he was associated with medicine.
That's true. Yeah.
I thought Hermes.
Sometimes
he's the one who had the.
The Caduceus. There's lots of confusing and contradictory explanations out there behind what Hermes is actually carrying and what the Caduceus used in medical, you know, symbology and signage. Uh-huh. Who that's actually associated with?
Darn you, ancient religions.
Mm. Why do you have to make this so hard?
But Ferrica, being both about healing and disease, you know, and medicine and poison, is very interesting. There's a the Greek word pharmakon. I don't know if I've shared this before on the show. We've talked about this before, but pharmakon, you know, where you get pharmacology, pharmacy, stuff like that. It covers a wide range of meanings that includes, you know, medicine, drug, poison, and magic charm. You know, all that stuff like that is packed inside that word, pharmakon. You know, like when you, yeah. if you've heard the term medicine man, you know, his job covers all those things.
Yeah.
Charm, poisons, medicines.
It's a really interesting duality, because they've said that enough of one substance can both cure you, or too much can poison you. So that's the same sort of thing we see here. So what does she do? She does stuff.
Weird stuff.
Pay a black and a green and exile a creature card, target creature card from the graveyard. Its owner gets a 1/1 black and green snake enchantment creature token with death touch onto the battlefield. So that really doesn't, all that ties into is snakes. Not so much poison. I mean, I guess you're turning over a dead body, but you're not doing anything like, whoa, there's no heal. I don't know. Truly.
I found it. Apollo is the god of healing and plague. And, blah, 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 blah. Hang on. I lost it. Where'd it go? He's animals sacred guy to Apollo include blah, 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 ravens, crows, foxes, mice, and snakes. So she's another, essentially, it looks like another aspect of Apollo.
Apollo wore a lot of hats.
He had a serious hat. It's like he played Team Fortress 2. He had all the hats.
Why he gotta be going after the Magi, yo? So, here, I know that when she was spoiled, there were people saying she's great, and there were other people saying she's terrible, and there were people saying she's awesome, and then they read that it was owner that gets the token, and like, oh, she's terrible, so I think the jury's kind of still out.
Yeah, I think everyone's right. I think she sucks, and she's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She gets rid of something you really don't want to be in the graveyard.
And graveyard removal, especially in multiplayer, is kind of important. I mean, in our playgroup, we don't have a whole lot of it, and I think we could honestly use a little more mimeoplasm, Mike. You know?
Yeah. Sorry, I burned down your corpse. Here's a snake.
Or, you know, I've got my Cedrus deck, who's just like, woo, all this stuff is in the graveyard, now it's dead, now it's back, now it's dead, now it's back. So, and you know me, I don't do any infinite shenanigans, but some of it, oh look, I get all these zombies back. Oh look, Noxious School. Oh look, I win. Everybody does it. And I'm not saying we all need to neuter each other's decks, but
baby,
we have a lot of shenanigans with that sort of stuff going on.
I think
Mike's playing the Zedge deck.
Oh. It's kind of weird to me how, and it seems to me it's most this what am I trying to say?
This is most
the case with her, that instead of having a design that goes with her role as a god in Theros, they just gave her a black green design.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because it feeds right into that you exile something from the graveyard is a black thing, but to be given a creature is a green thing, and the hybrid is, it's a green creature with death touch.
That's, and then they can potentially feed more things in the graveyards. You know, then you get more snakes, or somebody gets more snakes. It's crazy. I agree with Mike and Dark.
I mean, I like the card, but I was disappointed that she got just a black-green design instead of a god of healing and affliction design.
Yeah. Heal you, be a snake.
Yeah, I think that would have been neat, instead of the black being removal and death touch, that it'd be something similar to what's his name? Erebus's ability, where it'd be you someone loses life and you gain a little bit of life, because that would feed into the affliction a little bit more. Or just simply,
if there was some life drain, or if, you know, one part of, or if she could regenerate a creature somehow, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some interesting possibilities, and they didn't really play to any of that, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, enough of her.
Two left.
There is, how do
there's
we?
With two abilities.
How did we figure out you pronounced this guy's name?
Iros.
I say Iros.
Well, given Brian's propensity for mispronouncing things, I'll go with Mike. So
that's fair.
Eros, god of victory, costs 4. He's the red white guy. He's a big centaur thing. And he is unfair. Creatures you control can't be blocked except by 2 or more creatures, and prevents all damage that would be dealt to attacking creatures you control. This is the pure aggro guy.
This was another one of those gods that when they spoiled it, everybody said, oh my god, the aggro decks are going to be so good. All you have to do is play Eros, win. And once again, I have heard of 0 decks playing this guy. At least, you know, playing this guy and winning. I don't know about you, Chewy, because you do more of this stuff than I do, but
I've seen lots of lots of different flavors of white or red-white aggro decks. But I may have seen him once, maybe twice, maybe.
I'd be surprised if you saw him twice.
Yeah, because I think just what there is in Standard right now, you don't actually need him.
Yeah. Which is in terms of his role in the books, I mean, they talk about him, but most of these minor gods, you actually don't see him. I'm looking at, like, Ephara and Carmetra and Farika and this guy are all mentioned. Well, I don't know that Carmetra is even mentioned, honestly, but we never see him. We actually see more of Mogus than we do of this guy. So he likes centaurs.
He's ridiculous for making dudes and turning them sideways, though. Holy crap. Just ridiculous.
See, I would have thought with what's the guild that he's
Boros.
That with Boros, that he would be a big figurehead.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, and there have always been, you know, for the past couple of years, and there still are Boros aggro decks, but for some reason, he doesn't make the cut.
And even now, you know, Boros decks, the creatures with the battalion mechanic, they all want to attack. So that makes a lot of sense. But the white red decks we're seeing now are pretty much 90% burn and Chandra's Phoenix. And that's about it. So they're more focused on just the direct damage. Well, the white's a splash and it allows for
Boros Charm
and War Leader's Helix.
There's the red decks that are red aggro that splash white for Boros Charm, and then there's the white decks that are white aggro that splash red for Boros Charm. It's weird.
But sometimes the red decks splash green for the Blood Rush guy instead.
Yeah.
What's that guy's name?
The Gorklan Rampranger.
Yeah.
Although even he seems to have dropped off a little bit, so.
A little bit, yeah.
Hopefully not too much. He's a really good card.
With the new enemy Painlands, actually, I saw one, I think this week, maybe last week, that had both.
Cool.
It had Boros Charm and Chain to the Rocks, and then it had Gorklan Rampager. I'm like, whoa.
Cause greed.
Yeah. Perfect mana is perfect, so go for it. And as we said earlier, Eros is more of Athena's warfare and battle strategy side.
Yeah.
Whereas Ephara is more of her Susie Homemaker side.
the city.
Yeah. The city, yeah. All right, and last one.
The weirdest one.
The weird one is this
both,
guy.
Both the card and the character.
Yeah, so for Kruphix, you have no maximum hand size. And if unused mana would empty from your mana pool, that mana becomes colorless instead. Yeah, so the card says he's the god of horizons, but he's also the god of mysteries, secrets. He shares that role with Phoenix, beginnings and endings. And in Theros, he's the oldest and most mysterious and least understood of all the gods. And he's the only one who knows the true nature of the world. In the case of being, you know, super old and mysterious, he kind of shares that with Uranos in Greek mythology.
I don't know
that. The weird old man.
Yeah, I think that's about as good as you can come up with. I don't think you can have a better
I got a better
analogy.
One.
What's that?
he is Terminus.
Terminus?
Terminus.
Terminus, the god of boundaries.
Well, that's actually very appropriate.
Is that Greek?
I don't know. I'm looking. Hang on.
That's actually appropriate.
Because I was trying to think, like, I don't know who the equivalent of Janus Apertus and Janus Clusius is for Greek mythology.
Let's see here. Terminus, the god, blah, blah, blah. Worship, Latin word for boundary stone. Oh, no, he's more Roman than Greek.
See, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Terminus, reminded of...
Terminus and Janus are Roman.
Oh, okay. I'm reminded of an issue of The Sandman that involves the Emperor Gaius, what's his name, going out to be a beggar for a day to plan his to plot and plan what he's going to do with the world, and he takes a dwarf with him who is an actor who anyway whatever, and he's talking about how you know the gods that he fears are. The divine Julius, because, you know, he became a god, of course, after he died. And Terminus, because all the gods, even the mighty Zeus, has boundaries. So all the gods must bow to Terminus. And that, when you were describing what Crufix is, that just hit me in the head. It's like, he is obviously this guy, but he's not Greek.
It's too bad. He's pretty close because, as we said, he's not necessarily the head of the pantheon, but more or less because he just doesn't need to be. He was the first of these gods, probably because at the time people didn't really know what the gods were, and when he was created, he's almost the embodiment of the nature of godhood itself and the nature of Nyx. Spoiler alert, because, you know, we've been talking about this the whole time, but when Elspeth and Ajani venture into Nyx, they actually travel through the body of Crufix, because that's the border itself into Nyx. And once inside him, they find that they have to select an altar and do a quest and choose a character, and there's a new challenger and blah, blah, blah.
You gotta roll for stats.
Yeah.
You gotta choose wisely. And
roll the planar die, but he's just really weird, and he doesn't have any like obvious powers, but he has the ability to literally pull every other god all at once back into Nyx and silence their powers. So that's pretty significant, but he doesn't want to be out flat. The difference between him and Heliod is Heliod wants everybody to know that he's there. He wants to be, he's the god of the sun. He shrouds Nyx. He's like, I am me. And Crufix is just like, yeah, whatever. I'm just going to be chilling over here. Hey, stay in line. Stay in line. Because a couple of times Heliod mentions he's afraid of what Crufix will do if he steps out of line. So, I mean, I don't know what he's gonna use all, he's been saving that mana for like forever. And he's been tapping in all his lands every turn. It's got million mana, so he's gonna do it for something.
Yeah,
so.
He's got literally 70 cards in his hand.
Yeah. He's looking at you and he's like, go. And you're like, oh god. Oh god. So.
Yeah, I mean, being the god of the cosmos and mystery and the unknown, he's nearly impossible to figure out. And so is his card. I mean, you can tell that it's good, and those abilities are powerful. But after you read them, you're like, now what?
What
do I do with it? What am I supposed to do with that?
They don't combo really into each other.
It's too open-ended.
I mean, they kind of sort of, but not really.
You're just like, okay, I could do anything with this. What do I do with this? Restrictions breed creativity.
But since there are no restrictions here, it's like, damn it.
Yeah, you run into choice paralysis.
Yeah. Hey, look, that's the gods.
Crufix has definitely done nothing and constructed.
Yeah.
He's just too weird. He's good, but he's just too weird.
Yeah, he's definitely a casual player. He's like, oh my god, do you know what I can do with this?
It's like, no, you're going to have to explain it to me.
Well, anyone that says that is going to explain it to you. Even if you go, don't care. Just know, just listen, dude, listen.
Well, Crufix sounds like he would be an amazing card to have as a general.
Yes.
I mean, he's just like for us, it's the card right next to him is Karamatra, that he, he is going to be a very good commander for standard or anything like that. Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, for instance, if Dirk, if you were to turn your green-blue Maro deck into a commander deck somehow, I'm pretty sure Krifix would be in charge.
Yeah, yeah. All right, then. So it sounds like that's the gods.
What have we learned? I don't know.
These gods are cool.
They're pretty awesome.
Greek mythology's cool. I knew that already, though, so I didn't actually learn anything.
You know, and for most of them, we agree with the general consensus on how good or not good they turned out to be. You know, there are a couple where we're like, come on, man, really? Where, you know, Athreos being among them.
And, you know, we're not done yet. I mean, they're not rotating out for a long time, so.
That's true. There's another year left, and for some of them, it might get really interesting with the three-color clans in Tarkir.
Apparently, the gods give me hiccups. All right, then. So this was not one of those topics that's meant to give you guys some sort of lesson. We just want to talk about cool stuff.
Yes.
So I guess with that, we will move into final thoughts because it's late as balls and Dirk is probably teetering on the edge of a divorce.
Whoa.
So, actually, you were pretty close. She just came down and was like, I cannot believe you guys are still in this.
We can't either, Chelsea, honey. So hey, Dirk, why don't you final thoughts first?
final thoughts. I thought this was a really cool topic. I'm glad we did it. So we'll see what we do here in the near future with other topics. So I really don't have any major final thoughts.
Good night, Dirk.
Yeah, that's the big final thought is I have to go like all right. Now. All right. Night, everyone.
All right. Peace.
Good night.
Good night, Dirk. So, Mike, final thoughts?
Dirk is right. I'm glad we talked about this. It is nice to go back and do a retrospective on stuff that we've already seen just to check how things have changed and what we still think about them, you know, not waiting until they're rotating out to go back and recap them, because that's usually when we do stuff like that. But yeah, I think it was good to look back over these and talk about them and what we've learned about them in the intervening time.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, oh, I'm sure I'm glad Splinter Twin is rotating out of standard. It's like, oh darn, Blood Artist is gone, you know, stuff like that.
Which for some reason, either last week or the week before, I was under the impression, even though I knew that rotation wasn't happening yet, that that's what we should do. It was weirding me out.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wait, why aren't we going to talk? It was, I think it was the week before we had Lansdale on, so 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, why aren't we going to talk about this? Isn't it time? And I'm like, well, this stuff's not rotating. Yeah, but it's time, right? I'm like, wait, no. I think I might have problems.
Well, clearly.
Hey.
All right, that's it.
Word. B?
Tired. A while ago, I tried to do... The release events for M15 are going on MTGO. And I was like, okay. And I went and I purchased a... M15 core set release sealed event pack, which includes the 6 boosters and the tickets you need. It's just one item that you purchase. And then I went to a sealed queue and I entered and I clicked on it and I tried to enter and it's like, you must put in 26 tickets. And I'm like, okay, where's the option where I choose to use this event pack? I haven't opened it or anything like that. And I tried to go and find an event that I could use it for, and none were listed. So I actually broke out the old Call Wizards card, because I hadn't used that in a long time. And I said, hey, I have an issue with online. You know, is this who I speak to? Like, yeah. And I'm like, this is what's going on. I purchased this, and if it's not a mistake, then can you just tell me what events I can actually use this for? Because it says it's a release event sealed pack or whatever. And he's like, sure, hold on. I'll put you on hold while I double check that. And he put me on hold for a couple of minutes. He came back and he said, you're sure it wasn't the draft pack? I said, no, it was the sealed event. And he's like, okay. He came back a minute later. He's like, this is going to sound weird. This is the wizard's employee saying this, but I'm not showing any events where you can actually use that. So we're gonna figure out a refund for you. So I'm thinking what happened is that, you know, I mean, they've done these sorts of things in the past. They have these packs in the past. They must have just not coded it in as an entry option. But because there's nowhere else to use it, it's kind of useless. So I guess you could open it up, but as soon as you open it up, then you can't use it for anything else. So
that's weird.
And it didn't even have as an option just submitting the packs and the event tickets. It was just the event tickets. So I can't believe I'm the only person that would have this problem, since it's available through their main shop. So that's weird. If this goes up soon, and I know Chewy's been doing a good job of putting them up relatively soon, if the release events are still going on, just be careful about that, because you don't need the headache. Yeah, that's my final thought.
And for anyone that wants to, that hasn't tried out version 4 of Magic Online yet, you might want to take some time and go watch Bill's new Squeedraft video. He did an M15 sealed event. The first time he booted up version 4, he started the recording and just went. So he's getting a feel for how everything works and playing in a sealed event all at the same time live on this video. So give that a look. It's on themanapool.com, of course. Give that a look if you are interested. Yay, content.
And with that, gentlemen, I am away because it's like late.
Word.
See you tomorrow. Wait, tomorrow? But I see you tomorrow? I'm probably not going to see you tomorrow. So see you around.
Maybe.
Night.
Wonder if he'll remember to send me any Mad Libs.
They're on the old computer. That's why I hadn't been able to send you any yet. So I actually have to load that up. So,
oh, okay.
Yes, I'll make a point of doing that. But by doing that, I'll need to disconnect Carrie's computer, because neither of them can hold a charge anymore. So I will get that to you tomorrow. Or Saturday. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Bye.
Because as the listeners know, we hit the second stretch goal, which involves everyone getting a, what is the word?
PDF.
PDF of Mad Libs. And Scott still claims that he is working on the Mad Libs on the website. He said he's going to redo them from the ground up. And rather than just try to offer up a fix for whatever went wrong, he's just going to do them better. So that's why, in case you're wondering why the Mad Libs on the site aren't working, that's why. And we're also, we haven't quite figured out, like, specifically how to do the backers get a show early just yet. In case you're wondering, hey, how come I got this the same time as everyone else? Well, we're working on it. We threw out, when we were first pitching this idea as a stretch goal, we threw out several ideas. And Scott was like, yeah, yeah, one of those will work. But now we have to iron out specifics. So.
Well, I mean, you can have a, I guess you can have a feed specific to it, and then just send that feed to whatever list of email addresses you get of backers.
Yeah, but that would involve having to store those somewhere and set up a manual feed.
Hmm.
Yeah, because anything we put on the Libsyn page goes out to everyone on the RSS feed, so we'd have to find somewhere else to put them before that.
So when you put something, when you load something to Libsyn, it just gets added to the feed immediately. There's no way to set a certain release date like you can with a blog post or something.
I think if you do, then no one can get to it. Like, I think it's like publishing. Anyway, we'll work that out, not on the air.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So, do I have any final thoughts? I talked about the Kickstarter already. Talked about sorting cards. Oh, dude, I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy. It was banging.
Oh, good.
If you haven't gone to see Guardians of the Galaxy, you should probably go see Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, for reals. It had the biggest opening weekend of the summer thus far, beating out the previous record holder, which was Captain America Winter Soldier, oddly enough. So, and not just like of comic book movies. No, the biggest opening weekend of the summer, period. So that's pretty awesome. And it was a lot of fun. And yeah. I'm happy that they're working the cosmic side of Marvel Comics into it.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since they announced it, I've been saying the only way they could possibly make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, because it's crap no one knows about or cares about. The only way they could possibly do it is to make it completely amazing. And they did. The casting was dead on. Say what you will about wrestlers as actors. Batista was a damn good Drax. There we go.
That's their job.
Yeah, but it's their job to do it badly. But yeah, Batista was a good Drax. Chris Pratt is just, he was born to be that version of Star-Lord. I don't actually know much about Star-Lord. What little bit I remember about Star-Lord is that he was sort of a sarcastic ass. So, perfect. The only exposure I've had to some of these newer cosmic characters is in, Annihilation, a story from several years ago. So, but it's introduced, the Nova Corps and, even Thanos shows up, and I did not know he was going to be in it until there he was, and I pooped a little. It wasn't for very long, but it didn't matter. I was like, and Mom turned and looked at, hell was that?
Nothing.
But anyway, so, yeah, as far as this goes, I don't really have a final thought.
Is Doctor Strange coming out next year or farther than that?
It must be further than that, because I have not even heard. Are they making a Doctor Strange?
Okay, maybe I'm just making something up. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I don't pay attention, so I don't know.
I thought there was going to be Doctor Strange, you know, to start showing off more of the supernatural side of the Marvel Universe that's, you know, that you would have caught glimpses of in Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider wasn't a Marvel Studios, was it?
I don't think so.
I know. And Ghost Rider 2, by the way, if you haven't seen Ghost Rider 2, don't.
Oh.
I enjoyed 1. 2 was awful. Just terrible. But anyway, there's something else magic related I was going to mention. There's the Squeedraft video. I'm working on a new random card of the day that I recorded last week, and then my intermittent part-time job decided it didn't want to be intermittent anymore. And then I had things come up. And also, as did I say this already? As I get better, I get more ambitious?
I don't know.
Okay, so as I get more experience with the recording software, or with the editing software rather, I get more ambitious with what I want the video to do. And there's things that are just going to look simple, you know, that you probably won't even think about that I don't know how to do. And once I do it, I do a little party, and I'm stuck right now for I want something to look like this, and I can't actually make it look like that. And it's pissing me off.
Let me try doing it better.
That is the next step, actually.
Okay.
So I really don't want to compromise the vision, but for the sake of getting it out there, I might have to and just figure out something else. But I'm, in case you're wondering, I thought you were going to do videos. Yeah, I'm working on it. I had to take like 4 days off from working on it, because of the job and the, family gathering. Oh, that was the other thing I was going to say. My old man and I are the all day champions in the this Saturday championship, cornhole championship series brought to you by, what was it? Bud Light and Carolina, Lexington Barbecue.
Oh, I didn't understand that when I read it somewhere. I didn't understand what you were trying to say. So what went on?
So, some family came in from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin Michelle and her husband and 3 kids, and they were all up at my, aunt and uncle's house. And so the parents and I went over there to hang out with them. And of course, when the old man and Uncle P get together, there's going to be cornhole. And then Ted, who is my cousin Michelle's husband, also got in on it. And Ted and Michelle, this is what you guys have to understand, okay? You guys don't know my family, but Ted and Michelle are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
When Lex and I were dating, we were up there visiting, and we hung out with Ted and Michelle one night. We realized that before they had kids, they're probably the coolest people alive. Like, they are so great. Their sense of humor is just constantly. And it's dead on and hilarious, and they're so much fun. And now that they've had 3 kids, they're getting back towards it. When it was just 1 kid, and then it was just 2 kids, they sort of lost some of that a little bit because they were busy going, children. But now that there's 3 kids, they don't care anymore. And they're
it's weird how that works.
It is. She explained it to me one day, but the listeners don't care. But it's, they're a lot of fun. So we ended up playing, I figured it out, later. We played 22 games of cornhole. Because we played a total over the course of the day of 8 best-of-3 rounds, and 2 of those went 2-0. But the old man and I ended up winning of the 5 best-of-2 that we played over the course of the day and night. We ended up winning 3 of them. Which means, and we played so long that it got dark. Luckily, Uncle P's cornhole boards have a ring of blue LEDs in the hole. No kidding. So we got
that's
to
hardcore.
Keep, yeah, yeah. As Ted said, never underestimate the ingenuity of rednecks. So we got to the point where
I was going to say redneck, but I haven't met your family, and I don't know how.
Oh yeah, they're totally rednecks.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
But yeah, it got to the point where all you could see was the blue hole, and you just throw the beanbag at the blue hole, and it, you know, hope you get there. But it was a lot of fun. Mike has played cornhole with me and the old man before, mm-hmm. So he can imagine what that was like.
After I finally started taking the old man's advice, I was not missing at all.
Yeah, yeah.
The bags would fly off the end of the board all the time, but I was hitting the center of the board every single shot after I finally started listening and taking his advice.
It's terrifying, isn't it? But anyway, so yeah, that's that. I had to take Saturday, so Thursday and Friday I had to run trips for the intermittent part-time job, and then Saturday was that, which lasted all day and night, and then Sunday went to see Guardians and hung out with Molly, and then I was just exhausted. Playing 22 games of cornhole really, really destroyed my knee. I've been limping ever since. Today I didn't limp so much, so that's good. And then I had a drive Monday and a drive today, and in between that I was working on things and getting Monday Night Magic posted and ironing out details for the Tilt Expo. So that's what's going on. I'm actually doing stuff, which is why the content is sort of lacking. So I was really, really thankful to Bill for sending me the squeeze draft to put up, or squeeze sealed, whatever. You know what I mean. So, hey, Mike, when are we going to get together and do some streaming of our own without some, you know, copyrighted music? That sounds good. Let's do it then.
Yeah, I don't know. I found out that game day is this weekend. I'd forgotten.
Whoops. I did not know that.
Yes, hopefully you'll have some good advice for me if you go to FNM tomorrow. but I hope next weekend after that, some weekend very soon.
Word. And yeah, if we're not busy one night, we can always do it at night.
That's true, but I know that there are certain times of the day and week that it's more convenient for people to tune into stuff like that.
Sure. So how about this? Listeners, let us know when you want us to stream. We've got anything from dual decks to working on casual decks to working on ADH decks to sit around shooting the breeze, whatever with something specific, you know, whatever you guys want. When do you want us to do that? So let's start there. So send us an email. That would probably be the best way. Send us an email or tweet. Yeah. Or Facebook. Just whatever. Contact us somehow. Let us know when is good for you. We know Friday nights are usually off because everyone goes to FNM. And if you don't, then you don't, but lots of people do. So let us know. Yeah. So I think with that, I'll be done. So. This was fun. This has been episode 334. Oh, right. Contact information. Send us an email, dorks@themanapool.com. Follow us on Twitter, @themanapool. Facebook.com/themanapool. Go like that. That broke 700 likes when I wasn't looking. It's crazy. Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. It's, The Manapool Tube is our YouTube channel. What's the other thing? Everyone should go watch that unnecessary censorship that Scott did of a Kickstarter video. It's pretty funny. Did you watch that, Mike?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good. And what's it? Oh yeah, Twitch is /themanapool, I think. Isn't it? I think that's right. Where I really need to go in and cut out some more highlights of our stream. At least get the Homelands draft, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So enough of that. This has been episode 334 of The Manapool. Thank you all very much for listening, and go play some Magic.